Blog Talk Radio.
We'll go ahead and open up the phone lines here. Caller from the 480, you're on live with the Black Channel. Okay, caller from 480, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hey, how's it going, Jason? This is Chris of Phoenix from Detroit. Listening to the show, man, everything you're saying, man, it's painful. It's painful being a Black person who considers themselves awake to know that what you say, that there are Blacks that would oppose your mission of empowerment. They do exist, and their number is, it overwhelms the empowerment community. I'm almost driven to the point of hopelessness, because what can we do? Our numbers are so small, and we're just as disenfranchised as those who are pro-white. What can we do, man? I mean, when I hear this stuff, I saw the video. I even shared it on Facebook. What do we do, Jason? I mean, this is breaking my heart.
Well, we are going to make a decision that we are either going to wake up or we're going to die. Those are going to be your options. We are going to make the choice that we are going to wake up or we're going to perish. But there will be no middle ground. There is none, and there can be none. Black people, as a group, have got to shed this nonsense that making other groups of people happy with us comes before our own self-interest. Because we've told ourselves, and as you can see, even the young people accept that, we've told ourselves that there is no Black self-interest outside of white people. There is no Black self-interest. When you use terms like America, our country, whatever, there don't see any interests outside of that. That's the only one that matters. That's the only one that matters. You want to hear something that'll be a little more frightening for you?
I do not.
I've got hundreds of people listening now. Hundreds. You're the only caller.
Are you serious?
I'm serious.
I figured just because as soon as I saw the number jump popped up, I figured that would be between 1 and 5. But to be the only caller, the one, because this stuff is scary. But I'm man enough to say, man, I'm hurt. I don't know what to do for my group. And when I reach out, I talk to other people, man. I try to bring as many people as I can over to your channel just to give them something else to think about. You know, because we've been inundated with all these Eurocentric images and just everything, and I say, hey man, give it a check. And when people actually do it, and they listen, they say, man, this guy's too deep. Why the human stuff comes up? We need to think about how we can help everybody. And I always tell them this. And a lot of the stuff you say, I basically shoplift. You know, you said something a while ago about something more or less or another. You know your place when you can say how many Black people live in Chinatown and how many Chinese live in Harlem. And you said one of those numbers is zero and one is not. And I try to use that analogy to let people know that, you know, other people have no problem being proud in erecting walls of language and culture to keep others out. They accept your economy, your money, but you're not a member, you know. And Black people are so afraid of Blackness and standing up for themselves and self-respect. That it breaks my heart, man, because I look at these numbers. It's kind of like a zombie apocalypse. You see that their number is legion, and you don't know what to do. And what it would take, we just don't have.
What I'm saying is that Santiago was right. Those who do not learn from their history are doomed to repeat it. And what I'm telling you is that 160 years ago, Black people were on the plantations. I have a simple question for you, brother. because you're sitting in the year 2014. Tell me, have black people learned the lessons of the plantations? As evidenced by our behavior, our ideology, the way we act, how we treat our children, what we teach our children, and how we behave in the society in general. Have we learned the lessons of the plantations?
You know, anybody that says that we have is a liar, because we own and control exactly what we own now, what we owned and controlled then. We haven't learned anything. If anything, as you said before, you and Dr. Claude Anderson, we were forced to practice group economics back then. Now, you can't pay black people to deal with black people business-wise. It's terrible.
Now, if we haven't learned the lessons of the plantations, and we know that those who do not learn the lessons of history are doomed to repeat them, then that really only leaves us one viable conclusion. We have not learned the lessons of those places. We haven't learned. We're sitting here, and we're talking, and we're complaining about the ramifications and the effects of it, but we have not learned the lessons of those plantations. We haven't. That's why a broadcast like mine that demands that people be adults and be serious, I don't talk to people about sex. If I did, I would be so much more popular. I don't talk about that. And black people do not want to discuss anything other than sex, clothes, and their problems. They do not want to discuss getting out of their problems. Why? Because getting out of our problems as black people would require us to separate our faces from the oppressors. It would require us to shed that oppressed mindset. And black people as a group do not want to do that. Why? Because just like white society draws its identity from oppressing us, black people draw their identity from being oppressed. Black people would not know what to do with empowerment. That's why no black people around the world as a group are empowered. Black people don't actually know what power is or what it does or why it's here. And the people that we desperately want to be like told us that you don't even need it. And if you do get it, I'll feel some kind of way about you. That's what will happen. That's what they are most concerned about is, wait, hold a second. No. Okay. We'll get to that black empowerment thing here in a moment. Did you say I'd be less popular with them? Whoa, I don't know if I can do all this, man. I don't know if I can do all this. Man, you're asking a lot. I don't know if I can do that. That's where we are now.
Jason, if I may share a story about my own personal experience in this whole we're human thing, when I first started in telecom, you know, I didn't know anything. You know, I was sent on a job. You know, I had basically, in order to get the work, I had to tell them that, hey, I could, you know, I'm proficient in this, and I had to replace the BSIM in the RUC in the cabinet. Long story short, I got there, and they had sent a Filipino guy with me. We get there, you know, what I did know how to do, I had done. And when it got to that part, I asked him, like, hey, man, have you ever done this? And, you know, he had said, no, I don't even know how to do it. And I walked outside to get some tools from the truck. And when I walked back in, he was already finished. It's not really a difficult job, but I just had never done it or seen it done. And when I asked him, why did you do that? He told me that if I had been from his country, he would have told me. And from that point, I knew that everybody sticks together but us, because a black man wouldn't have had that national sense of pride to say, no, because if you're here, that means that one of mine is not. That, it blew my mind. That human stuff It's for cowards, traitors, people who are scared to stand up for their own because they don't deem themselves worthy of anything decent.
You know, as you all know in the past months, that I've never had as many black men angry with me, individuals who should know better, I never had as many black men angry with me until I told them that the only black man who can speak about the black woman is the black man who's with one. In other words, as soon as I started saying something that they took offense at, their interracialism, all of a sudden, that was a problem. They never made videos day after day about white supremacy. They never did that. But they were making videos day after day about me. Now, that was what upset them. Being weak and poor, that didn't bother him. That didn't bother the lackeys that clapped like monkeys to support the fraud. That didn't bother any of them. White supremacy's boot on their neck, they didn't talk about that day in and day out. They didn't talk about that. You never saw them going on day after day talking about how we're going to deal with white supremacy. I said one thing about their interracial dating, and then it became a war cancel every day about what are we going to do about this Negro over here. That's what you've got going on today. That's what they do today. And the next time one of them or the fraud tries to sit up and talk to you all about that, you just remind them that, you know what, you got credentials because it was time to speak against white supremacy. You said, no, I'm going to speak against black people. I'm not going to speak for black people. I'm against them. This is what we draw our identity from. This is what we get it from. I'll let you have the last word.
Last word, black first.
Black first, but thank you very much for joining us here. Let's go ahead and see if we can grab a caller from the 424. You're on live with the Black Channel.
What's up, my brother? Much love, man. Much love. Much respect. Long-time listener, first-time caller. This is your brother, Devin Lockett. I'm right here in Los Angeles, DevinLockett.com. I just say that because I say some controversial things, and I stand behind what I say. So anybody who has any problem, they know where to see me, they know where to find me, and we can handle it. You are right on point, my brother. You have been right on point for a very long time about black empowerment. Now, I won't really get into the dating thing because to each his own as far as I'm concerned, and that, I mean, I'm a little older, and I've lived in over 30 countries. I've experienced the black experience throughout the diaspora. I grew up in New Orleans, which if you're familiar, I'm sure you're a Louisiana brother. You're familiar with the fact that Louisiana is the home, the cradle and the nest of our African-American culture here in the United States. And we have a sense of common sense that makes us, I guess, unique among black people outside of Louisiana. I'm not trying to be an elitist, but I think you know what I'm talking about. And it's the wisdom that you're kicking right now as far as black first and black empowerment and what is going down with, what is my brother here, Dr. Anderson, you know, he's slipping my mind right now, man, with Powernomics, right, with Dr. Claude Anderson and Powernomics. This is what's really going on. I am on the avant-garde right here with you, and I'm going to tell you something. You know, as an African-American entrepreneur, we are definitely at war, okay? I have seen how we are not, how we are deliberately shut out of the new technology. I'm in the cyber world for a living, the web world. And, you know, mathematics, this is mathematics. This is cyber technology. So, you know, this is just as, I guess you could say, democratic as mathematics, right? It's just as worldwide as mathematics. No, there is a deliberate front to keep us out of that particular area of the economy, just like there is a deliberate front to keep us out of biomedical engineering. This, well, I guess, is a deliberate front.
Well, let me ask you about that. Describe for me, what is this deliberate front to keep us out? What is it?
Oh, well, I've been a biomedical engineer since the year 1984. It'll be 30 years on the 4th of July. I graduated from biomedical engineering school on the 4th of July. I have confronted racism, and I have owned my own biomedical engineering company, which you can see online, biomedrx.com, my own engineering company since 1996.
Okay, Devin.
Yes.
I'm going to say this one time, brother, and I'm going to say this as politely as I can. If you name drop one more URL on my podcast, I'm going to drop you and ban you.
No plug-in. All right. My bad.
Stop talking for just a moment here, okay? Because I know that sometimes brothers get empowered and they kind of get to rolling. It is not because anything against somebody who's doing something. That's fine. The only thing is, you want to advertise on my broadcast, send me a message.
You're right.
All that will really do is make me, first of all, that's going to turn people off, because this is the 21st century. Name dropping don't do anything except put people off. If I bring you to people, they will listen. You try to shove yourself through the door, that's not a very good businessman. Because white people don't do that with each other. And Asians don't do that with each other. And unfortunately, we're part of that group that does that.
I'm not trying to shamelessly plug. I just wanted to reinforce credentials, and I'm a little excited because I'm in a field where we're scarce,
okay?
Where black people are scarce.
Let me tell you, we're going to assume your credentials, okay? Just going to assume you have them. So you don't have anything to prove.
I understand. The other night I was listening to you in the telecom. I was listening to you talk to the brother in the telecom industry. And that's when it struck home. I'm like, oh, my God, man, another brother in technology. He understands what's going on. It's that way, man. It's the same thing they've been doing with the police department, the fire department. They have a way of protecting skilled but not necessarily degreed jobs, right, for the mediocre of the dominant society. There's many more mediocre in the dominant society than there are exceptional, even though we have this belief that, you know, they're supposed to be smart, or they paint themselves as so smart. But there's many more mediocre, and that's where the crux of the discrimination takes place. And this is the only thing I'm trying to illustrate by mentioning these particular industries, because they're industries that don't necessarily require a college degree, like a bachelor's or a master's or above, but they are paying better than working at, you know, your standard entry-level UPS job or a post office or whatever. And that's when you get to that middle area where there's a lot of smart brothers that can do it, and there's a lot of smart others that can do it. And that's where the wrestling and tug of war goes on. That's where you really find blatant discrimination in hiring, discrimination on the job, ostracizing brothers on the job. You find it, man. It's vicious. It's right in that zone right there. It's right in that middle zone. You ever notice when you find brothers that are lawyers, you know, they already had their law degree, they already passed the bar, and they go to work with dreadlocks? And the only other brother that can go to work with dreadlocks is the janitor. You know?
And that's an interesting point.
You understand my point, brother?
But why is that?
Because it's the middle zone. It's the bell curve. You know, the bell curve is high in the middle.
That's not it.
It's the middle zone.
That is not it.
There's a lot of smart brothers.
That's not it. It has nothing to do with, well, there's a middle zone. It has to do with, what do you own? What do you control?
And what do you control?
And what are you
of
passing
course.
Down? A person with a
like
law
Dr.
degree.
Like Dr. Anderson has said.
Well, a person with a law degree, he has a choice. He can go to work for a firm, or he can work for himself. So whether he works for a firm or not, they have, as long as you're good at it, they have to accept your hairstyle, because otherwise they will lose the talent to someone else. You take a corporation.
And they can't take your credits away from you, and they can't take your bar away from you. Once you pass the bar, they can't take that away.
But You take a look at corporations like Microsoft, corporations like Google, corporations like Apple, corporations like Pixar, and industrial like Magic. Place, in other words, places where the employees, if they were not engineers working for Google, they'd be engineers pursuing their own thing. So now we have a vested interest in making sure that these individuals are happy, and we are certainly not going to tick off some guy about this here, especially if he makes the millions or even billions of dollars. That is the difference.
And they're paying them millions, too. They're paying them millions.
Yeah, but the difference
is,
though,
that they're an employee millionaire.
Yeah, but it's not, it's just that there's this set-up place within the economy or whatever. It is because those types of fields, doctors, lawyers, engineers, these are individuals who are right there. They're learning a skill that is so valuable, they could actually take it out into the world on their own and trade on it. Whereas everybody else goes to work for a company, learns how the company does things, and then becomes a cog in the machine of the company. So if you're on the side
where integration did to us.
If you're on the side where you own that skill set and you are able to take it with you, then you've got ownership. If you're on the side where you're filling out applications, that's where you get pushed around at.
Well, integration taught us to get to go to school, get a good job, and get a nice piece of the other man's pie. Integration very conveniently washed away the history of us having our own pies. In several independent African-American townships and cities, we all know, we can talk all night about the Black Wall Street and several other very thriving black cities and townships throughout the United States pre-integration. However, maybe it's time for us to stop complaining about the fact that integration did destroy this for us and reestablish this for ourselves.
Well, I don't see how that's going to happen. That's going to be a bit of difficulty based on some things I heard you say earlier. You started off your call by saying that to each his own when it comes to their dating. I have a question for you.
Sexually. Sexually, I understand what you mean. Because what you're saying is that you don't care if your offspring is like yourself. I understand the meaning behind that.
Devin, we have a problem here, okay?
Okay.
We're having a communication gap. If I'm talking, you don't start talking. Not because I'm rude, not because I'm a jerk, but because people can only hear one of us at a time. I think I've held you on the line long enough to let you know I'm not going to sit up here and give you 2 seconds to talk and then move on to the next person. I'll give you a chance here. But really, I understand that black people are not accustomed to being listened to, but this is the reason I have a broadcast that goes on for 4+ hours. People don't have to jostle here. They can actually listen to. But that's not going to work if somebody keeps talking over the other person. Now, the reason I can do that is because I'm the host, and if I see somebody going off the rails, I got to get them back on. But other than that, that would be very helpful if you stick with us here, brother, because I would hate to lose you.
I'm with you, bro. I'm with you.
Okay.
Go ahead on.
You made the statement to each his own. There's a problem with that. And the problem with that is in for a penny, in for a pound. Now, how are you going to make the distinction between sleeping with non-black women, dating non-black women, and marrying and having children with non-black women? How do we make a distinction between all of those?
No, you don't make a distinction between all those. You don't, man. You don't. And I was not disagreeing with you. I wasn't disagreeing with you at all.
Okay, how do we come to the conclusion then? Up to each his own.
Just because of my personal age and I pick my battles and I see the young brothers having to learn what I've already learned. You know what I mean? And I sound young, but I'm not quite that young. And just because of my age, what I'm here to talk to you about is the dollar bills and how we can get on track with that. And I do totally agree with you on that issue as well, because I've lived long enough, and I've learned that lesson. You know, I've learned that, true love can only come from someone who loves themselves first. You can't give what you don't have. And if a person does not love themselves, they can't give love to another. And that includes a black person who has not learned to love himself as being black first. And if you can't love what you see in another person, which is blackness, then you know, you're a far cry from actually achieving that whole thing of love. But I'm only talking about the fact that since you do have a limited amount of time.
Let's go back to that.
Okay.
Are you with a non-black woman now?
No, I am not.
Okay. When was the last time you were with one?
A black woman or a non-black woman?
A non-black woman.
A few years ago. Several years ago.
It's been a few years ago. Okay. Here's the problem that we have. And you are free to and mate whoever you want to. Let's just understand that what people have had to learn here over the past few weeks is that you cannot build a black society without a black man and a black woman. It seems like that's common sense.
Of course not.
You seem to grapple with that. But here's the problem.
Of course not. I don't grapple with that. Yeah.
Well, you need a black man and a black woman to build a black society, but you can't build a black society without a black man and a black woman, and you need a black economy to build a black society.
Yes.
So all three are interconnected. We cannot talk about our money without talking about our mating. We cannot talk about our society without talking about our money. And we can't talk about our mating without talking about our society. It all comes full circle. So when we say phrases like to each his own, understand that has far-reaching ramifications. And I just wanted to make sure about that because you said that more than once now. So if there's any part of that you wanted to amend, I think this would be the time to start cutting and pasting.
I understand where you're coming from, right? I understand where you're coming from with the total picture. I just feel like where we are right now, I observe so many young brothers with the tight jeans on, the tight jeans sagging, the raising the single mother households. Our battle as brothers, old school brothers, right? Our battle as old school brothers who really know what time it is very, very large. And I would love to wrap the whole package up together and say, young brothers, you need to swallow this and swallow this whole, because this is what you need to identify yourself as a black man and begin to fight the battle that you must fight in order to survive and in order for your progeny to survive on this planet. I'm totally, totally down. And I respect you for taking the entire battle upon your shoulders. My only thing as far as not biting really hard into the brothers that are experimenting in the dating world and whatnot, my only thing as far as not biting into them with that is that MOB, right? Money over booty. Let's say the word booty, right? Money over booty, right? So that we can, they are all a priority, right? The way we spend our money, the way we love, the way we spend our money, the way we love, all of this, it's all connected.
Devin,
but I don't know
really.
If they're equally powerful as far as affecting our condition.
Not really. Because the problem is that we as black people, and particularly black men, because we are at the very bottom, we as black people, since we are living in an occupied society, since we are the oppressed people, by definition, money is not the most important thing to the average black man. Because it is much easier for him to get sex than it is for him to get money. Because money is power, and the society makes sure that you do not get your hands on power. So by definition, the reason that so many of them chase sex, because that's so much easier to get. Power could take years, or even decades, before you ever see a return on that investment. Whereas sex is something you can get tonight. That's why so many black men put stock in their value and how many women they can get into bed.
He
does not have control over the economy. He does not have control, and because he does not control the economy, he does not control his politics, his judiciary, his media. And so the only thing he does have control over is his woman. Or we have confused sexual power as being a societal power. And that's what
so
ended
will,
up now.
Very good point. Excellent point. So will get King the black man to get himself sexually straight, help him get himself more empowered economically more quickly, or
yes.
will that just waste his time in teaching him who to fuck first? I mean, excuse me.
Okay.
Sorry.
Understand
excuse
something,
my friend.
Okay?
Excuse my friend.
When you're
excuse
making a soldier of somebody, what do you do? You take him to a boot camp. You put him with all of the other men. Know what it means to be a soldier. They think they do, but don't know what it means to be a soldier. In the military, they call it breaking you down to build you up. And what they do is they cut your hair to change the way you look.
I'm a veteran, dog. I'm a veteran.
Okay.
Man.
You understand they will look like everybody else around them for the purpose of impressing one thing upon you, that what you are doing here, this is the most important thing you could be doing. That's
yes,
why we don't
exactly.
have women. That's why you do not have women in the barracks with the men, because automatically
absolutely.
The men will have something different on their minds, and we want them to stay focused like a laser beam, and that is why you can make a professional soldier in 12 months, but we have not been able to make professional black men in 20 years of their lives.
This is true. And along with your analogy, I will also elaborate that there are certain drill instructors that are there to teach you how to wear your uniform and who to salute, who not to salute, how to march, how to stand at attention, how to turn left face, right face, about face, and how to do all of the customs and courtesies of the military. And there are other drill instructors that are there to show you how to fire your weapon straight and how to kill a man, which is your job. When I'm talking about business and making money, and I am not talking about pussy, I am talking about firing your weapon. I am talking about guns. We will think about butter later. We will think about fucking once we have made money. We do not deserve pussy until we have made money. This is where I'm coming from. My priority for the black man is to make money. It doesn't matter who he fucks. It does not matter who he has sex with or who he has children with. First and foremost, our men do not concentrate enough on making money in American society, and this breaks my heart, my brother. This breaks my heart, okay? And if I had to break down a priority between the two, I would love to wrap it all together and say all is black and black is beautiful, and if you ain't all black, you ain't all beautiful and all of that shit. But if I had to take an honest look, 49 years on this planet, if I had to take an honest look at my people, I have traveled in 30 countries in the Caribbean and Latin America fighting against the injustices of colonialism, trying to help people in the black diaspora improve the quality of their health care, and I have had attempts taken upon my life for this endeavor. It is about the money. I do understand where you're coming from as far as the intermixing and all the rest of that, but you know what? It is about the money. We are starving for money. When we go for reparations from this government, the way the Caribbean, my brothers in the Caribbean are doing, okay, when we finally have the balls to stand up against the European powers that enslaved us and the American powers that created the most powerful nation on earth on the backs of our labor, we are not asking for pussy, sir. We are asking for money.
And if we do that, like I say, as right now, you can accomplish anything if you have an undisciplined workforce, and the black male workforce is about as undisciplined as it possibly gets. I've
yes,
had a bunch
sir.
Of people call in here last 10 minutes here, so I'm going to need to make more calls. I'll let you the last word.
No, much love and respect, man. You got 100 support from your brother, man. You see me on Facebook. I'm your friend on Facebook. You know, holler at your boy. If you're ever doing a project or anything, I got film experience. You can see my editing stuff, my reel and stuff online. If you need any help, I'm here 100% to support
well,
you.
Well, why brother. Don't now, you know, I talk about that a lot as far as that's concerned, because control of media is important.
Yes, it is.
We need to have media is the way that a society connects and converses with itself. And we need to have our own media. So Why don't you send me a message on Facebook and just let me send me a link to your reel, okay? Because that would be
the
most important for me. What kind of camera do you use?
Well, right now I got a 5D, but I have used the Red. I've used the Red One. I've used a couple of the Red versions. So, I mean, I am familiar with all of the different, you know, they all have a rolling shutter. So, I mean, you know, the same problems exist with the same. It's all about the glass, really, right? It's about the lenses you're using and the editing. And I've got that together. I've got the complete studio together.
Well, definitely send me a message on that. I'd like to take a look at your stuff, and because there are other people who are wondering how to do these things. And if they're not able to do it themselves, it'd be good for them to get in touch with somebody they can contact and say, hey, I've got something I want to do. Can you help me a project together? So send me a message on that.
I appreciate
it. And I can start letting people know, because, I mean, I know Tim Alexander, and I know a few other people, and that kind of thing would be helpful.
Wonderful, man. I'm very glad we made this hookup, my brother.
Thank you very much for checking.
Much support. Much respect, man. Much respect.
Blackbird, brother, thank you very much for checking in with us. Well, I think I cut him off there. Let me go ahead and grab another call here. Caller from the 732, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hello, Mr. Jason. How you doing?
Okay, somebody's calling me inside of a Dixie cup. You might want to take the phone off speaker or get out from the bed, wherever you are, but understand what you're saying.
Hello, Mr. Jason. How you doing?
How you doing?
Hello?
What's your name? Where you call from?
I'm Chris, and you know I'm calling from Illinois.
Hello, Chris from Illinois.
Sir,
what's your mind, brother?
Yeah, sir. I mean, the things that you've been saying ring with me, and I've experienced it firsthand. Let me tell you something that happened to me Friday. Friday, I went to take my professional engineering exam. I'm a civil engineer, and when I got to the room, sat down, I was the only black guy in the room. And I looked around, I said, man, nobody looks like me. I didn't let that intimidate me. I took the exam, but prior to that, I remember the day before I went to the barbershop, I saw a lot of black men there. All they were talking about was music, sex, and cars. And I said, I've never heard any one of them mention owning a business. The only guy who owned a business there was actually the man who owned the barbershop. But everybody else, they were talking about sex, car, clothes, girls. And I said, so how do we expect to advance? And even at work, I'm always the only black guy in the room most of the time. When there is an important meeting, I'm the only black guy there. And I'm like, it bothers me because where are other black men? How come when I go outside, I see other black men? I go to the city, black men are there. But when it comes to, like, as you start getting some elevation, you start moving up in life, you see that, wow, where are other black men? But you see black men when you're outside. And one other thing, sir, like, I called to comment on, to the point that my heart was so broken, I went on Facebook. I wrote about it. I said, how come that black men were always there to talk about sex, car, clothes, but when it comes to getting knowledge, we are never present. I said, now we've become enemies of knowledge. And one more thing I said, reading is fundamental. Reading is fundamental. And television is tell a life, your vision. I said, pick up a book and read. That may change one or two things. Acquire knowledge, because there is nothing wrong with knowledge. To the point my uncle sent me on Facebook, he said, Chris, that black empowerment stuff you are talking about is not good, because you sound like you are proud. I said, Uncle, I'm not proud, but it breaks my heart to see fellow black men who look like me making dumb decisions. This is what bothers me, sir. He said, well, your message guys sound kind of offensive. And I told my uncle, well, you know what? That was not the point behind it. They asked me to take it down. I said, no, I would not take it down, because this is what I believe. I said, sir, when I go to high school and speak to children, this is exactly what I talk to them about. It gets to a point where our children are also brainwashed. I was in East St. Louis talking to some high school kids. You know what one of them told me? Oh, jails are becoming overcrowded, so they are actually releasing a lot of black men to go home. I said, you know one thing, how stupid does that sound? Do you know how many new prisons they are putting up right now all over the country? They're telling you it's crowded, so you can act stupid and they will find a place to put you. I said, don't
believe your phone's breaking on you there.
Yes, and I said, stop believing the hype
when you hear something like this, do research online, because the internet is not only there for Facebook and Twitter. You could do research too. I said right now as we speak, they are building and actually enlarging so many other prisons we have. And I'm like, they have room for you, because going to jail is the new slavery these days.
And the Department of Homeland Security is jamming his phone. That's what's going on there. You might be in a bad cell reception area. Let me find out here from your brother if you can still hear me. How old are you?
I'm 27 years old, sir.
Okay, you're 10 years younger than me. And you are starting to realize, sitting there, what city are you in?
Right now I'm in Collinsville, Illinois. I work for the Department of Transportation.
Okay, Collinsville. Now, you know from being in Collinsville that what you're witnessing is the power of strength in numbers, or should I say the opposite thereof. That as a black man, you are incredibly vulnerable, because how many other black men can you look up with and deal with to get something bigger than what you have? Black men, so many of us, this is what I meant before about we've signed on to being an oppressed people. We draw our identity from being oppressed. You are not supposed to be born of this world, live your life, and then die exactly the way that you live. Do you know how sad that would be if you had exactly the same amount of knowledge at the age of 35 that you did at the age of 5? Now, if we can recognize and acknowledge that you shouldn't be as unintelligent at 35 as you were at 5, then why do we not also acknowledge that you should also not be as unaccomplished and unprosperous at 35 as you were at the age of 5? And yet, with black men, that's exactly what happens. Their standard of living and everything else never improves. The quality of woman that they can have never improves. They've always got Big Mama Thornton. They've always got Hattie McDaniels, because they've never improved themselves so that they can deserve a better value of woman. So guess what? And they started elevating Hattie McDaniels. Wow, that's the best he can get. So he's trying to fit, shine, vomit. What I'm saying is that as men in particular, are you listening? Is that part of what you're referring to when you say that it's your heart? Because I know that definitely impacts me, in that that's the way it is, that other men have got groups of men that they can deal with. They can have that 300 moment with other men among their people. As black men, it's not 300, it's usually just 3, if you can get that many together.
And, sir, I mean, everything that you just say is on point. And it's like, one thing about me is that I always sought knowledge. And I always knew that I do not know it all. I always surrounded myself with positive folks. For instance, my mentor owned his own company in St. Louis. And he told me, he's been teaching me, say, Chris, this is how you go about things. And he told me, the mistakes I made when I started mine, I don't want you to make them. And he's just, he gets to a point where even like when I'm looking for counsel, there is nobody there. And black men, we have this mentality of being beat down. Just like you say, we sign up for becoming oppressed. And I said, the greatest mistake anybody could have done is to give me access to books. I said, if you give me access to books, that's right, there goes your downfall, because I'll read and acquire knowledge and learn to infiltrate and actually become greater, because there are so much information available in books. And that's why I read more than I watch TV. This is why I read more than I party, because I said knowledge is important and it's crucial, and this is what we lack in this day and age. Sir, don't expect to become popular, because what you are saying is not common. He does not massage people's emotions. And I'm being honest with you, because what you are saying actually impacts some folks. People who call the show is actually people who want to become better people. But besides that, people who are interested in twerking, what you are talking about now is nothing but blah, 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 blah. Even I have some coworkers, sir. I wanted to gather people to take the exam. Nobody was interested. I wanted to gather people so we could have a movie night, watch Hidden Colors. Nobody really replied or said anything. But once he was about trying to turn up, everybody answered. I said, hold on. I think I'm in the midst of the wrong crowd right there. And I kind of restrained myself. I pretty much
I'll let you in on something. Most of the people listening to this broadcast are the same way. I mean, I have a higher preponderance of intelligent, high-minded people here, but if we were to be totally honest about it, most of them are the same way. Most black people just masquerade. Nobody wants to talk about black empowerment unless they come here. And that's really because they're having a problem and they need black empowerment. So just like, you know, hoe the projects, don't look for a deep man until after they've been hoed out and got five kids by five goons. Now they want Mr. Decent. That's the way the black people in general treat black empowerment, that we're here to play the police force. We're here to play fire department. That if you have a problem, you go find those black empowerment people who work in slave. Now, the rest of the year, you just do what you want to do. But when it's your time, you do what you want to do. But if you need help, hey, I heard this, these social service here. Do you know how powerful the Panthers would have become if just one out of every of those people would have joined the Panthers? Do you know how powerful that organization would have become?
Yeah, we would have become like a mighty organization. But the thing is that, I don't know. It's just like, sir, let me tell you a bit of my background, really. I wasn't born here in the United States. By birth, I'm Haitian. I was born in Haiti. I moved here at a certain age. Did not know how to speak English. I went to school, and afterwards I went to college. I mean, my dad, my grandpa was a farmer. He worked hard to send my dad to school, and my dad ended up working for the government, and then he moved here in Haiti and moved here. I mean, this is who I am. One thing that bothers me, sir, is I see foreigners, for instance, the Nigerian, the Cameroonian, the Haitian, sometimes come here and make a name for themselves, and sometimes I see that my black brothers who were born here are not making progress. And it breaks my heart because I know we all come from the same place. And one more thing is that when I was receiving my bachelor's in civil engineering, that was back in 2010, when I graduated in my engineering class, we had four Haitians to graduate. And we had the only African-American we had was a black girl, was not even a man. The men were nowhere to be found. And we had two other Nigerian guys, and that was it. And I said, so a group is being misrepresented here. Awesome. I mean, to me, it didn't make sense. Out of, I think, 56 civil engineers to graduate, only seven of them were black. And not only that, out of that seven, only one African-American girl. Everybody else were foreigners. And I see foreigners come here and make things happen. But on the other hand, I said, where is everybody else? For instance, the company I work for, we only have one African-American who is a male engineer. The other African-American we have are all women that are engineers. And a good chunk of them, of the engineers, are actually foreigners. We have three Haitians. We have two Nigerians and two other guys from Togo. And that's it.
Don't get me started on Togo, by the way. Don't get me started on that, but go ahead.
But sir, one thing I say is that, I mean, like, it bothers me. This is why I volunteer, take time, and go to high school and speak to students. And I tell them there is a way out. And when I speak to them, all of them, sometimes you hear what you hear is that I want to become a ball player. I want to become a rapper. But I said, hold on. What, like, do you know? I said, do you know if 10 of you decide to become lawyers, that you can actually fight the system that's actually sending brothers to jail sometimes for no reason? And I said, what you guys do not understand is this. The lawyer that you work with is actually friends with the DA. They convince you to take a plea bargain. At the end of the day, the DA get the conviction, and your lawyer get the big bucks, but you end up going to jail. I said, you guys do not know that. It's a negotiation that happens. Nobody really cares for you.
Slow down. Because you just made a very good point right there that I wonder how many people actually understood that. Because what you just described was the cost of ignorance. What you just described was the cost of not being empowered. That black men have no choice but to hire a lawyer They do not understand that even in those cases, most of the lawyers that they hire are, as you said, first with the DA. God help you if you have a public defender. Because that's the DA's office, basically. And in a situation like that where I've had that happen before, I had a lawyer that I wound up firing because it was a case. And when I walked in there, they were smiling too damn much with the plaintiff's attorneys. Y'all are smiling a little too damn much. And I'm like, okay, guess who's getting fired as soon as I walk out of this room? You're not going to make it. It's 11 o'clock in the morning. Kid, you ain't going to make it to lunch. You're not going to make it to lunchtime. As soon as I walk out of here, I am firing you on the spot. And I explain to him that I now see why things are not getting done on the timetable I want it done on. I want an attorney who is adversarial with the other side, not one who's friendly.
Exactly.
But we don't have that. We don't have that mindset, civilly, criminally, or otherwise. We don't actually understand it because we ourselves are not movers and shapers in power. Now, if I'm trying to get zoning or something, well, hell yeah, I want my attorney to be very good friends with the city hall and everything. If I'm trying to get something from them, yeah, I want that. But if this is a situation where there's something that I want to get but they don't want to get me, I need somebody who's going to be able to be 1 minute they're a kitten and the next minute they're a bull. And with black men, we don't usually have the ability to afford being able to do that. We end up just getting what they sling at us, which is exactly where we end up being. And welcome back to that concept, we're all human. That takes the burden off your shoulders, I guess, if you're not ready to take responsibility. Let's talk about that responsibility thing, though, because that's something here you might be able to talk about. Do you agree with me that the average black male is scared of power because power would require responsibility?
Well, of course. I was that same little, I was scared to some extent until my dad set me down and told me, young man, listen, Chris, you have no choice but to be successful. My dad built my confidence so much from that talk. Till this day, I remember every word of it. He told me that, say, Chris, you have no choice. You're going to be successful. And power demands responsibility. Because the more powerful you become, you have to learn to control that and not abuse it. That man, he's just like, my dad, fantastic. I mean, he's just like, sir, I mean, it gets to a point where I said, thinking is not illegal. And that's what sometimes we refuse to do. Because if we think, we will be able to actually ascend the ladders and learn to understand. Sir, I watch Bachelors all the time. Like, that show, I don't watch Bachelors all the time, but I've watched it before. How come the man goes to the woman and said, yes, you know, I love you, I'm the perfect man for you. The other guy is doing the same thing towards the final stage, said, I love you, I want to be with you. And each guy has to work hard to win the woman over. But I said, okay, how come us black folks, that some of these politicians don't even show up in our neighborhoods? But then again, they send the Negro representative they have. Next thing we know, we just run and vote for them. I said, doesn't our vote matters? Doesn't what we think matters? If somebody values you, how come they don't come to the hood where you live and talk to you and convince you? And you sit them down and say, what are you willing to do for me? But I said, we never do that. We just jump behind a slogan. Hey, you know one thing? He's this, he's that. I said, no, I'm not that kind of person. When you want a woman, don't you pursue the woman and you tell her, you convince her that you love her? Then if that person won your vote, then how come you don't invite them over to sit there and convince you how you should give them your vote? I said, why you do this? I said, you are so cheap and easy to win that to the point nobody values you. I said, the woman that gives free and easy sex, the woman values her. Just like you are so gullible, you just believe the politicians will come and say, you know one thing? Oh, well, I'm under this party. I want you. Guess what? They know you are so gullible to all they do is send a representative to convince you, and at the end of the day, nothing gets done in your own neighborhood. I said, because you,
well,
don't think you don't value.
Because you have no demands. As I explained
exactly.
Last night, the average black person, which is what you were saying, that as long as they acknowledge their existence, in other words, as long as they give you a little attention, then you will accept that as power. You will accept that as, well, I got what I wanted because he actually saw me. No, it's not good enough that he saw you. Did he give you what you wanted? do you actually even know? Because the average black person, the reason why we do not succeed as a voting bloc, the reason why we succeed at voting but we do not succeed in ever improving our situation is because we have not actually informed anybody of what exactly it is that we are trying to get. We don't actually have a list of demands. Our demand was that you stop and notice us. They stop, they notice us, pat us on the head, and keep going. And what we're supposed to be doing is saying, I don't care if you never acknowledge that I'm here. You're supposed to do what I say. I don't want a pat on the head, a greeting card, or a damn billboard. Get these damn police out of here. That's what we told you to do, and hasn't been done. But then again, when you're black people, we learned after Trayvon Martin how dedicated we are to that. Chicago is a killing field as far as the police department brutalizing black men, and we see how far that's gotten. A city with a sizable black population. You have no power, you have no wealth, thus you have no influence. That's why the three things, when I mention them, they come in that order. Power, wealth, influence. Because you gain power to get wealth, you use wealth to protect the power, and the power and the wealth are what give you your influence. I put up a video today called the Hollywood. I put up a video today called the Hollywood Whorehouse. In case anybody, if there's anybody here who hasn't been to go see it, you ought to. And it talks about that. I have a part in there where I mention people that white men do not beg their women to get into line. White men cultivate power, wealth, and influence, and that is what gets women into line. They don't have to tell people what they want. Power, wealth, and influence, and that is what gets them what they want.
Sir, you know, one thing I wanted to say is that what you say is so true. Let me explain something to you. The Jews, when they moved here after the Holocaust, what did people say to them? You are Christ killer. They were actually discriminated in this country. Though some of them had white skin, you know what they did? They sent their children to school. They started having lawyers, doctors, engineers, businessmen, to the point that they are 2% of the population of the United States. They have a say in almost everything that is done in the country because they have learned to gather wealth, which created power. Do you know how many Jewish lawyers that actually exist these days? This guy, who actually a big movie producer, Spielberg, he's a Jew. Mark Zuckerberg is a Jew. Name them. All these guys are Jew, and you see how much of the media they control. And this is what we don't do. I say marches were great back in the 60s, but after the 60s, that was the time we were supposed to use to build wealth and power. Because the Jews, they never really march, but they were able to create this alone because of what they've learned to understand how when you create wealth, it makes you powerful. I tell people all the time, campaign costs money. And lobbyists always get their way because people want to be elected. Guess what? They write checks of, what, $300,000 to $500,000 so they can get their ways done. I said, black folks, we have no money to support any politician anyway. So this is why they always get their ways. Because these big corporations, Jewish corporation, will write a check for $500,000. They say, we want you to pass this bill that will actually favor the Jews. Why not? But that's what we don't have. We don't even have money. With your welfare check, that's how you're going to do it?
But it goes beyond that. It goes beyond that, however. What is politics? And I get into this in my documentary, 7 a.m. And for those of you who are not familiar with 7 a.m. or this is your first time hearing about it, you can go to the website, 7ammovie.com, and see the all-star lineup they have there that we're talking to for this documentary. This is not a little thing. But in there, that's one of the things we get into, is that black people think they know what racism is, and they don't. Black people think they know what empowerment is, but they don't. They all think that they know what politics is, and they don't. Politics is the system by which we decide how we are going to divide up a society's resources. Here's the problem. The problem is, what if you are the group of people in the society who have no resources, and the chief resource of any society is money? But what if you are the people who don't have any? Then what? So all you can really do is sit up here and beg politicians to divide up somebody else's money and somebody else's wealth. You can't talk to the politicians about building an automotive plant. You can't tell them that we need to overlook these environmental concerns. The reason why these corporations have lobbyists there every day and black folk don't is because the corporations are doing something and black people aren't. We don't ask for you because we have nothing to ask for. What are black people demanding be moved? What are black, who are black people demanding be displaced so that we can progress? Black people are not out there saying that we want these four schools to remain open. You close them three over there in the white neighborhoods. Black people are not doing that. We're not doing that anywhere at all. That's not what we're doing. So thus, our lack of money prevents us from being able to buy politicians, lease politicians. And I'm telling you that it goes even further than that. Our lack of money prevents us from being even able to discuss politics.
Oh,
all we
exactly.
can complain about the politics. Our lack of money prevents us from even being able to engage in the discussion.
Yep. And, sir, we are not even, we are not even part of the conversation, really. When you look at it, when you hear from it, it's like everything that we have is being taken away from us slowly. And, sir, I wanted to ask you for some advice to something I'm facing at work currently. You know, when I first started with my company, the first day I went there, my name is Christopher Laurent. So it sounds French. So they thought it was a white guy coming to work, right? But when I arrived the first day, everybody was looking for a white French guy. The guy never showed up. It was me. When they asked me for my name, I told them. And I was wearing a suit, looking real nice. And everybody was shocked because they never actually saw a black man with such name. And the top guy came over and then he started asking me questions on different topics and trying to fill me out at first. And after I spoke to him, the conversation lasted 30 minutes. And he went to somebody and told the person, you know what, there's something different about this young man. He's not the He's not usual. He's not the usual like kind of person you would meet. He seems like to have a good head on his shoulder. He was like, hey, see something different about this young man. And you know, I kept on going to work. Everybody would wear jeans. I would always wear my suit, shirt, tie, always looking real nice because I understand that your appearance matters. And it got to a point where I mean, even people in the company was like, started saying, oh, well, it wasn't black people, really. It was just Caucasian who kept on saying, yeah, this young black man coming here, it's like he wants a tone. Like he has, you could see he has a very high image of himself. He doesn't see himself as a regular worker. You could see in his mindset, he act and think like a boss. You can see that this young man came here, he came to take over. He didn't come to be a regular worker just like us. And, you know, I keep hearing, to the point that one of them actually said, this young man is a different kind of black. And I said, what? I mean, when they said that to me, I just laughed and shook my head and walked off. I was like, yeah, he's a different kind of black. He's not the same kind of black people we are used to seeing. And it bothered me. And I'm like, why? I mean, why all these things are being said? Sir, what do you think on this? Can you please shed some light for me, please?
I think that the way that you carry yourself is going to tell people a lot of things. The way that you walk, the way that you hold your head. There's a picture that's been going around. They're talking about this kid with these long dreads on his head, talking about he's got a 5.0 GPA. Here's the problem. He also looks just like T-Pain. And that's the problem.
Yeah, that's true.
He does not, if you've all seen the picture, he doesn't look like he's ready to take on the world. He looks shy. He's got they're doing an interview with him, and he's got a baseball cap on. He does not look like he's ready for business. He does not look like a young prodigy. And what I'm telling you that, well, he may be black and a good test taker, but I do not see a future leader there. Got nothing to do with his youth. The boy's almost grown. They're talking about Ivy League schools for him. He's almost grown now, y'all. Actually, he pretty much is. And does he look like the future president of Harvard Law Review? No, he does not. He looks exactly like what he is, ready to jump into a rap video. So even your best and brightest among black men tend to sit there with their heads down. They want to look like people who are beneath them. That's how you end up with a woman like Michelle Obama, the most important and powerful black woman on the planet, and yet she's talking about, she idolizes Beyonce, and she's dancing the Dougie. She does not look up the icons like Coretta Scott King and Betty Shabazz and Ida B. Wells and Rosa Parks. She's looking down, down at dwarves, down at the pygmies, down to Beyonce, down to Nicki Minaj. Those are the people that she's looking towards. That's what black people tend to do. Now, her husband, on the other hand, you've never heard him act like that. So when I tell you that's a marriage of convenience, what I just explained to you is the proof right there. Anybody who wants to deny it, you're just living in a dream world. In any case, that is what we black people tend to do. So, brother, understand, from the way you talk to the way you walk to the way that you look in their eye when they're speaking to you, as opposed to looking at their arms or looking at their feet, all those things are markedly different. The average black male does not do that. I'll give you a case point here. The Rick Ross video called In Cold Blood. Just take a look at the way that he walks down the aisle. You got to see the video for yourself. Take a look at the way he walks down the aisle at the beginning of the video with that little ditty bop that black men like to do so much. And you, a black man who walks with a purpose, not with a ditty bop, not with a gangsta limp. You're not walking like you're dancing. You're walking like you're on business. First thing people want to know.
Oh, yeah.
Because black people take a serious black man in a whole different way than they take anybody else. They see a black man who's serious, they want to know. They want to know because they don't know if the revolution's getting ready to get started. They don't know what's going on, but they do know whatever it is. When a black man is serious about getting something done, he can take out anybody around him. We can excel and overcome anybody when we put ourselves to it. Nobody can touch us when we put our minds to it. Nobody.
Sir.
And that's why you looking serious is such a threat to them. I got to take some more calls here, but let you have the last word.
Yes, sir. I mean, I wish we could talk longer. You know, these are the things I learned from the Haitian Revolution and things of that sort, that when black people come together, they can achieve much. To the point where, I mean, even the top bosses at my company, people claim to say they are racist, that they actually take notice and pause and talk to me and know me by name. You know, it was a pleasure talking to you. I mean, I keep on listening, and, you know, Black First. Thank you very much, sir.
Black First, brother, thank you very much for joining us here tonight. Let's grab a few more telephone calls here. Caller from the 213, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Hi, Mr. Black. This is Kia. How are you doing?
Hello, Kia. Welcome back to the Black Channel. What's on your mind, sister?
Well, I want to say I really appreciate your show. I discovered you actually a few days ago when a friend sent a link about men posting pictures of black women dressed in various forms of clothing, and I liked what you had to say, and I also really appreciate the video you uploaded, I think yesterday or today, about whores in Hollywood and depiction of black women. And one thing that really stood out for me was the fact that you mentioned how women listen to builders, not beggars. And as a woman, I completely agree with that, just because it's very hard to respect a man who isn't working towards establishing anything of his own and setting up the resources so that he can protect and support a family. And I think that's a very big issue collectively in the black community, because you have a lot of men who unfortunately are in the beggar category. And when you're in the beggar category, you can't make demands of anyone, especially a woman, and especially a woman who has her own stuff going on. And obviously that's another issue too, because I do have observed that some women who do accomplish some sort of economic power are rather arrogant. Same token, you feel if you work hard and you manage to establish yourself, there is a little arrogance that go with that. However, on the same token, it's hard. It brings its own challenges in terms of relationships. So But, yeah, no, I really definitely appreciate this broadcast so far and what you have to say about a lot of issues affecting the black community.
Well, let me ask a couple of things about that here now. How old are you?
I'm 31.
Okay, you're 31 years old. And do you have any children?
No, never been pregnant.
Okay. That kind of thing is important because it gives us a concept and a grasp of the context of the person in the comments. Now, you're 31 years old. You don't have any children. I want to know, what do you think as a 31-year-old black female, and what city are you in?
Los Angeles.
Okay. As a 31-year-old black female in Los Angeles, as you know, if you listened to my podcast a few days ago, I talked about the fact that black people in California are now 7% of the population of the state.
Yes, we're losing 7%.
Isn't that amazing how things have practically flip-flopped? Basically, black people have traded places with Hispanics and with the Asians in California. They were 7%, now we are. It's amazing. We talk about, I'm not telling you that how California is going and how things are going to go for us nationally. First we went to third, now we're on the fourth. And we had Rodney King and the Watts riots when we were second. Now fall into fourth. What the hell do you think that? We had Oscar Grant when we were third, and now we fall into fourth. Do you feel that black people in California have a sense of urgency? Well, let's talk about a couple of things here first. I was asking earlier tonight about, are we black or are we all human? And I wanted to ask you what you think about that concept first before I ask you about whether or not black people in California feel a sense of urgency about their situation. But do you see us as black, or do you see us that we're all human?
I see us as black first and then human. That's how society views us. I mean, black and human are the same thing, but in terms of perceptions, I mean, when I think of myself as a person, I think of myself as black before anything else. That's just instantly how I identify.
Why are there so many people who want to make that distinction to say that we're not black, we're all human? Why do you think that it is?
Delusions, not wanting to deal with reality because it allows them to ignore what the issues are because, let's be honest, when other people look at us and deal with us, they're looking at us as black, not as human. We're all human because if that's the case, we wouldn't have issues of discrimination and disenfranchisement in our community. So I think they're ignoring the reality of what's going on. And so saying that they're black over their human forces them to acknowledge, okay, as a black person living in America, there are certain things I'm going to face that other groups of people don't have to deal with. And so, and I think just living in Los Angeles, I think a lot of the black people are a little too relaxed. Maybe it's too much sunshine, I'm not sure, but they don't get the urgency of how politically disenfranchised we are in this state. And part of that is due to the influx of illegal immigrants and Latinos taking over the political process in our state. And I'm not mad at them. I mean, I would do the exact same thing to empower my own group of people. They've been very strategic and smart about getting political power, and that's why a lot of issues that affect them directly are going through. I mean, in other states, illegal immigration is not even a debate. It's if you're not here legally, then you need to leave. In California, Los Angeles in particular, we make a lot of concessions for people who have no business being here. And I'm all for diversity.
Whoa, back up. You said we make a lot of concessions for people who have no business being here. I think what you meant to say is that they make a lot of concessions for Latinos who have no business being here. Let there be 50,000 Haitians walking around Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And police would be all over that. There is no black illegal alien problem in America or California. It's not there. And you will not see Congressman Gutierrez or Bustamante or any of the rest of them jumping up for Haitians. They won't be talking about the Africans. They won't be, that's none of them. We're not interested in that. Understand, when they say illegal aliens, they're referring to Latinos, and that's it. And they understand that. And that's code speak. They understand that. And what I'm saying is what you said before, they're looking out for what they see as their best interests because those are their people, in a lot of cases their family. And what I'm saying is that as we as black people, that is the Latino agenda. Okay, fine. Where is black agenda? Where is it?
I don't.
Because we talk about the black, when we say the word black, there's always three or four Negroes who jump up and say, no, we're not black, we're all human. That's black folk doing it. I've never been in a group of Hispanics where the Latinos jumped on somebody, had to jump on anybody because he jumped up and said, we're all human. I never heard that. And the only time that they use that is in defense of getting Latino agenda through. They're talking to non-Latins when they say that. But with each other, you never heard anybody make a pro-Latin statement and then a Latina jump up and say, you shouldn't be championing us Latinos like that. We're all human. That doesn't occur. It doesn't occur.
You know, I agree with you, and here's why. I think with other ethnic groups in this country, they have a sense of community and family. Even though they try to assimilate in American culture, they still want to hold a sense of their own. And so while they're assimilating on the outside, behind the scenes, they're still looking out for their own people. They're still learning about their culture, and they're still very pro-family. And so I've always had the theory, when you have a unified family, the members aren't as vulnerable as someone who's out there on their own. And one thing I've observed about, especially the Latino groups in California, is that they might have a few people come here. They're willing to all live in one-bedroom apartment while some of them are working, you know, remedial jobs, let's just be honest about it. They're sending their kids to school, and they're putting people through college and getting them into becoming doctors and lawyers, and they're owning their own businesses. And basically, they're building up their economy. And so when you have a large economy, politicians are going to cater to you because now you have money to keep them from winning elections. And also when you have the numbers to back that up, you become a powerful group. So that's how the Cubans became very politically powerful in Miami. And so what happened in the black community is, one, a lot of blacks started leaving Los Angeles. Two, they started aligning themselves with other minority groups without any expectation of reciprocity. What I mean by that is that they're joining these coalitions, and they're saying, okay, we're going to help you, we'll help you, but they're not putting their cards on the table saying, hey, if we agree to assist you, then what are you going to do for us? I think, in a way, black people are very unselfish, but they're not looking out for their personal best interests, and that's why,
okay,
as
now,
we go,
let's deal with that, because words matter. You said, in a lot of ways, black people are unselfish. That's a very salving, soothing way of saying black people are cowardly. Because if you have a plate of food and somebody else has a plate of food and they've eaten theirs and then they start taking your roll off your plate and then they take your vegetables off of yours and then they take the steak off of yours, that's not you being unselfish. You're supposed to stop them. That's you being cowardly because now they've eaten theirs. They ate yours and you don't eat at all, but you're telling everybody around you, well, I'm not selfish, you know, I believe in feeding everybody. Yeah, but you're starving now. We have a way of doing that with ourselves where we try to turn behaviors that we have no business doing into a positive, and it's absolutely mind-boggling. It's absolutely mind-boggling. We've turned poverty into a virtue. When in reality, let's just be honest about it, we're being cowardly. These other groups of people are getting what they want because they're not cowardly. Gays are 4% of the population, and yet they've got all momentum in California. Nobody's passing a damn law to tell police what not to do to black people. Nobody. But you got gay marriage, don't you?
I think the reason black people do that, though, is because they are expecting some kind of kudos or attaboys, and what happens is that other people take what they want, and then they leave the negotiation table because they already got what they wanted. And oftentimes, black people are left with empty hands. And so what I mean when I say black people are unselfish, I think as a culture, we tend to, unfortunately, give our last without making sure our behinds aren't covered. And that's problematic. And I think that might be rooted going back to slavery. And so I'm not using that as an excuse, but I just think the prevailing mentality is that black people are so used to doing without that it hasn't even become uncomfortable at this point when they give all the resources and economic power away to other groups of people, or even keep voting for the same politicians. I mean, that's another issue. Politicians, since black people tend to vote in masses for the Democratic Party, and I'm not saying going Republican, but it doesn't give politicians any type of incentive to appeal to what our community needs are. In fact, it's very interesting when a politician does try to address black specific issues, he's accused of catering to us, which is very offensive, that if other groups have an issue, whether it's the gays, the Jewish people, or Latinos, they're not accused of that. In fact, they better get in line and cater to what these people need, or they won't
be
elected.
Yeah, but who does the accusing, though? But who does the accusing of saying that you're catering to black folks? Who does that accusing?
Mainstream society, whites.
Because the most people that I hear from are mostly black people. That's the people that I most hear complaint from. A black politician talking about what he's going to do for black people, it is usually black people jump up and tell him he shouldn't do that because they are first and foremost concerned about what the dominant culture is going to think. We don't want to do anything that sets the dominant culture or forbid, make the dominant culture think that we're trying to have power and wealth like they have, because the dominant culture won't like that. Remember, every time we get power and wealth, they do something. So we have to make sure that we spend the rest of eternity poor, broke, and powerless, lest we should displease dominant culture.
Well, it goes back to economics. You fear what controls your resources. And so since black people don't control any resources or the means of economic exchange, then they have to be concerned about what the mainstream dominant culture thinks, because in any second, since we didn't prepare ourselves, they can take away your resources. Like, okay, you want to start some trouble, then okay, there's no jobs for you. And it's really sad, though, because even before segregation, after slavery, black people actually had each other to depend on. So we had our own businesses. We had the Black Wall Street. We had, you know, if you were a poor kid, you might have actually lived next door to a doctor or a lawyer or a teacher. And so you had that influence growing up, and you had your own businesses. And so I think, in a way, and this may sound very controversial, integration may have been one of the worst things that ever happened to black people, because then once we had integration, we didn't have to depend on each other for our businesses and our livelihood. We can go out into the mainstream culture and make money. And I know a lot of people fall for that, and I'm all for people having options, but it shouldn't be at the cost of building in your own communities.
Well, so black people went for integration because white people offered us something more important than money. White people offered us something that was more valuable than money, power, and self-respect. They offered us something that was more important than pride and dignity. They offered us a pat on the head and the promise of acceptance. And in black people's minds, that is more valuable than gold, silver, rubies, diamonds, and everything else. It's more valuable than our children. Getting acceptance, hell, forget acceptance, getting acknowledgement. Acknowledging acceptance by white people is more important to black people than their lives. Let's be honest about that.
Yes,
I want to try to take, so I'll let you go ahead and have the last word, definitely, and I'm very glad you gave us a call. How long, do you think that black people in California actually understand the gravity of their situation right now?
Absolutely not. A lot of people, unfortunately, especially black people in California, are very focused on entertainment and having stuff and being amused versus awareness of what's going on. I noticed that a lot of black people more on the East Coast and the South, they seem to be extremely aware of what's going on, but I hate to say this, my fellow black people in California are not. And so I wouldn't be surprised within the next 5 years or less that we have zero political power and our population declines even drastically, because we even prominent black neighborhoods, they're being gentrified, like Ladera Heights. And there was an issue back in Compton, which used to be predominantly black as well. They're being ran out. Black families are being ran out by Latino gangs, and the police are not really doing anything about it. And so, yeah, our population's definitely going to decline.
Well, I mean, but here's the problem, man. Your population is already at a deadly level. 7% of the population, do you know what that means? That means that if we eliminate just those three cells, Los Angeles, the Bay Area, you know, that Compton area, you just eliminate that triangle there, what do black people in California have? There is no sizable black presence in Sacramento. There is no sizable black presence in San Francisco, San Diego. There is no black power base in any of those places. You don't have that. So if you eliminated black power in that triangle, it's over. I mean, we've already got you cornered and all piled up in one centralized area. It's not, black people have zero presence and absolutely no influence in Northern California. Black ain't got nothing going on there. At Southern California, it's negligible. So once they've got you boxed in like that, you're only 7% of the state, they got you where they want you at this point. Did you know that at this point, they jail or put on parole every single black person in California, and what would that do? Would black people have any way of stopping that right now? With 7% of the state's population, 1% of the state's political power, and 0% of the state's wealth. You're 7% of the population, 1% of the power, and 0% of the wealth. How could you stop the Caucasians or the Latins from doing anything that they wanted to do to you? What you're discussing in Hawaiian Gardens and Harbor Gateway? Yeah. What can you do to stop them? The white folk have moved out of the way, and they've let the Latinos come in and take up the job of displacing black people militaristically. That way you can't say that it's white folk doing it. But I will have black men who will get on this phone. They don't. They haven't tonight. There goes that fear again. And they will argue in favor of dating whoever they want to.
Yeah, that's another issue in L.A., but that's a whole other conversation.
Well, what I want you to do is I want you to send me a message, okay? I want to get in touch with my callers. That if you're a new caller, just so I'll know who you are. Are you friends with me on Facebook?
Yes, I actually just added you. I was the one who sent you a message asking when your broadcast was showing. Wait,
do you know how many messages I get asking that?
Sure, I'll send you a message.
Yeah, try to send me another one. Just say, hi, I'm Kia. That way, at least I'll know who you are. We want to try to keep in touch, especially with our new people. That's something I learned in the corporate environment. It's your new people will become your long-term people if you can get to them early at the beginning. I definitely want you to keep in touch with us, and we definitely want to hear from you again, because in California, that's a no-man's land for black people right now. And I certainly hope you're making your plans to leave, because you ain't got nobody out there.
I am getting courted for a corporate position in New York City, so I'm actually probably be gone out of here within the next 2 months. And my parents are actually thinking about retiring in the Caribbean, so most of my people, they're not out here. They're in D.C., in other countries, or New York. So we're pretty much making our exodus out of California.
There's nothing there for you. Under Tom Bradley, that was the last time that black people had an opportunity to get anything done in California. We wasted it. We squandered it. We threw it away. That was the time to be pushing for it. And what black people did was they let Tom Bradley give all the power to the white Democratic establishment and the Latinos. Now black people have nothing. All black people have is the ability to vote, but they don't have anybody to vote for. And they don't have an issue to vote for. You are 7% of the population. What they wanted to do was get the other minority groups up high enough that the black was nullified. So the Asians by themselves are enough man-for-man, vote-for-vote to stalemate black people on anything. That means that it's only now between the Caucasians and Hispanics, and Hispanics things the way the Caucasians do. The Hispanics are not trying to do anything to stop white supremacy. They're building their own economy. And that means guess who's about to become the dog class, the underclass, the dust class? Guess who's about to become the bottom up? The Latinos don't have to worry about picking the strawberries and oranges anymore. That'll be black people's job very, very, very shortly. The sheer weight of numbers. Please make sure you send that message to your sister. I would definitely like to see that. And welcome to the Black Channel. Please do call us again. We definitely want to hear from you here. Well, it looks like whatever was on earlier, was it the game? I don't know what it was because my call board is just blown up here. So I don't know if there was a game on or whatever. I wonder if the basketball championships must have been on tonight or something because the call board just kind of blew up. So I'm going to see about going ahead and taking some more calls here. Everybody who's on the line, do not worry. We'll be able to get to you here. Caller from 619, you're on live with the Black Channel. Okay, caller from 619, last try. You're on live Black Channel.
I'm just listening.
Okay. Please keep both hands free just in case they call you because... I know there can be a temptation to start doing things with ourselves. Might want to hold off on that. Okay, caller from 619. I did not disconnect them. They disconnected themselves. All right, we'll see if we can try to get somebody else on here then. I'm going to try to... Okay, those are in there. Okay, I'll grab the first one I can get here then. Caller from 810, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Yeah, how you doing, Jason?
What's your name? Where you calling from?
Hello? My name's
yes,
Keith.
What's
I'm
your name? Where you calling
Armada,
from?
Michigan.
Okay,
oh, my name's
again?
Keith. I'm... Keith, can you hear me?
Yes, you say your name's Keith?
Yes. I just started listening to you, this week. But I had a question to ask you. Because it's basically like how... I'm 22 years old, and I grew up with my mother. She was a single mother. I had two other brothers, right? And the way she, like, raised me, she just, like, she believed in her church and everything, threw me out in juvenile because I didn't want to go to church, had me living on the streets. I ain't had nowhere to go. And my own people was turning against me because I didn't like religion. I wasn't understanding it. So, but... It was a white female. She had ended up taking me in up off the streets. But I've been listening to you, and I've been trying to see, like, am I not black empowerment? Because I talked to somebody that's white, because my own people threw me away to the court system. Like, I got a record and everything. I've been in juvenile since I was, like, 15.
Okay.
But
well,
these people took me in. And they haven't been nothing wrong to me. They helped me get a good job. I'm actually saving because I'm trying to start a business up. I was just saying because I don't know your opinion on it. I was just saying am I not black empowerment? Because I felt like my own people just threw me away for God. And if I try to talk to my mama, she don't even talk to me because I don't believe in her God.
Okay, well let's discuss a couple of things here first. I'm not really sure what you mean by I'm not black empowerment. I don't see how you can be black empowerment. I think what you're trying to say is can't be in favor of or about black empowerment. I'm not understanding what your question actually is. You said these
I'm
people
like,
went off. Okay, brother, stop for a moment. Stop for just a moment because you can't respond unless I actually ask a question first. I am not understanding exactly what you mean because what you said was, these white people took you in off the street. So I'm not understanding. Is your girlfriend? Is this foster family? Is this Christian services? Is this Hare Krishna? Is it Al-Qaeda? I'm not really sure exactly who you're referring to and under what circumstances that you are residing with them or that they helped you. So help me understand that, and maybe I can give my perspective on it.
All right. She was my friend at first. But then I made her my girlfriend. She was my friend at first. But she saw how, like, my own people was disowning me. So her people was going off on her, calling her, saying she's with a nigga and all this stuff. And she went against her people to help me out. But I'm saying, like, what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to start a little restaurant franchise and have – no black people work and get people off the streets because I got homeboys that sell drugs and stuff that I ain't trying to have that way for them so they don't get in trouble. So I've been saving up my money for like 2-3 years now. I don't do much, but I'm just saying, like, am I still considered for black people, or am I like a traitor because I talked to someone who helped me out when my people turned against me?
Okay, let me find out a few details here. How old are you?
I just turned 23.
Okay, you just turned 23. Well, you are a long ways from being a juvenile.
Yes, yes.
You're talking about stuff that happened when you were a juvenile. You are a ways away.
No, it was
away
from
that, brother. You're a ways away.
Yeah,
from
I understand.
Yeah, okay, but that's what you mentioned. Okay, I'm just talking about what you mentioned. You are a ways
yes
away from that. So let me just throw that out there first.
Yes.
We're a long way away from being a juvenile, okay? 5 years.
Yes,
that's a while ago. Now, next thing is, this young woman, how old is she?
She's 21.
She's 21. How long have you known her?
Yes. I've known her since she was 16, and I was 18.
Okay. So she was 16, you were 18.
Uh-huh.
And she was your girlfriend?
No, we were just friends. We were just friends.
Okay.
Like, we were just
what
friends.
What state you in?
What state?
Yes.
I'm in Michigan. I'm originally from Detroit, Michigan, but I had moved out further.
Okay, now, at what age did you start getting in trouble?
It started at from 14 to 18. I was in the juvenile court system. Then my mother gave me another chance to come. Me and her ain't get along. It was still about the religion thing. And she was trying to make me, like I had a little White Castle job, she was trying to make me pay light and gas bill. You know, a little White Castle check, I was making like $180 a week. And she was trying to get me to do all this stuff. And I asked her, could I like save up and try to get a car, because she wouldn't help me with nothing. But it started, the reason she's mad at me, because I stopped going to school because I didn't want to play basketball for her, because she was pushing basketball on me very heavy. And I didn't want to play that because I saw that that's all she wanted from me. If it wasn't anything about basketball, because I had people trying to give me scholarships and everything, if it wasn't about basketball, she didn't care. And then so she pulled the religious card. I get in trouble. She called the police. They'd say, I'm under her house. I got to live under her rules. And then when I was 18, she called him again because I didn't want to go. And I slammed my cell phone on the counter because the cop was like harassing me. So the cop arrested me, said that's domestic violence. I was getting aggressive. So I ended up getting in trouble for that. And when I was in juvenile, she told the lawyers that she didn't want me. Keep them in there, because the lawyers told her it's the best that I stay in there, because of when I turn 18, I'm going to be in prison. And I'm trying to ask your input, like, how am I supposed to respect my mother on that? Because she tell me God told her I can't come stay in her house because she ain't going to never get a hug. So I'm trying to get, like, how am I supposed to, because it's hard for me to respect my mother, I thought, because she really scarred me very bad.
Okay, let me ask about a couple of things here first then. Okay, we started getting in trouble at 14 because you decided that you did not want to go to school anymore. So what you're really saying is that you started...
No. I'm sorry, Mr. Black. I'm talking about at 14 I got in trouble about the church. But at 16,
okay,
it started getting even more heavier. That's when
school. Years, but the point is... Point is, you started skipping school.
No, I wasn't skipping school. I just when the school
you said,
said
you
I
started
didn't,
not
I started
going.
Doing.
You said I started not.
Yeah, I stopped
going.
Okay,
I stopped going to school. So we're just saying, what, you dropped out?
No, originally I started getting bad grades first, so they would kick me off.
Okay,
the basketball
that's
team.
Exactly what I'm referring to, son. You can't do that. Okay.
Okay.
That's the feminine trait that you just expressed. That you have to let that go as a male. You can't express feminine traits where you just want to be right and let somebody tell you you're right even if you're not. You started skipping school.
Yes.
Okay. You started skipping school. I don't care what your reason was. The fact is you started skipping. Your motivations are irrelevant. The fact is you started skipping school. Just like you didn't want to go to church.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what your reason was. I'm not going. Okay. We have to have a common frame of reference.
No.
So
you, when you say skipping, when you – okay, I was trying to get what you were saying by skipping. Are you talking about, like, not going to school? Just because I didn't start skipping. I wasn't just not going to school. I was going to school. I just
okay,
was sitting in the class not doing the work.
You just said I stopped going.
Yes. When I was the age at 17 to drop out, that's when I dropped out. I never skipped. I just dropped out.
Okay, so because I just asked you a minute ago about that, and you said no. I just asked you that directly. Did you drop out?
Oh, I didn't hear that, sir. That's why I keep asking were you able to hear me, because I have a bad reception.
Yeah, that's going to be a very – I can hear you just fine, but, I mean, I don't know if you're having bad reception. I hear you just fine. And I don't know if you heard the word drop out, and you said no. So now this is making me really suspicious. But my
no,
point
I didn't
is,
hear the word drop out. I didn't hear that word,
okay.
Sir. Not trying to assault your intelligence. I didn't hear that word.
Well, what happens in a situation like this is I can understand what you're saying, but I see a disciplinary problem coming on here. And I see what
okay.
was a disciplinary problem. And they wanted you to play basketball. What that tells me is
yes.
that you're not a small kid either.
Yes.
Okay. So that means that you are bigger than your mother is.
Yes, I'm bigger than her.
And you had a propensity for getting out of control with your mother. Now, here's something that we as males don't understand. There was an interview that was done with Jim Cornette last year, or year before last, where they asked about an altercation with Brock Lesnar, where Brock Lesnar did some inappropriate things with Jim Cornette's wife in the ring. I'll let you all look at that yourself. He, and anyway, got injured, and Jim Cornette, Brock was giggling about it because Brock was this big name, even in Ohio Valley Wrestling. They knew he was going to go on the big things and get drafted into the WWF. And Brock
mm-hmm.
was giggling about it and stuff, and Cornette told him, he said, look here, you big bastard. You do. If I hear about you doing something like that ever again, I'm not going to fight your ass. I'm just going to shoot your ass.
Okay.
And to which he explained to them, why would he say that he'd do something like that? He said, because have you seen Brock Lesnar? He's 6'5", 300 pounds. There are, what, four people in the world who could take him in a fist fight?
Yeah.
And little old 50-plus-year-old Jim Cornette going to try to be one of them? I don't think so. So he's got the reason why Lesnar wants to fist fight you is because he knows he's got the overwhelming advantage. You were not born at 6'5", 300 pounds, and to be as frighteningly fast as he is, he's got the advantage.
Right.
Brother, your mother's not going to sit there and fist fight with you. She's not going to do that at all. That would be stupid, silly for her to do something like that.
Right.
And by her telling you that she
never,
you,
okay.
Okay, by her telling you that she wanted you to go to church, that was probably more than likely a disciplinarian thing, because if you went into a military boot camp or whatever, it would be the same thing. You wouldn't be praying to Jesus. You'd just be getting up every day and doing the push-ups and praying to the flag is what you'd be doing. So that was probably
right.
her idea about what direction she was going with that. But clearly, I see some disciplinary issues here that were at work at the time, and you were far too big for her to be put over her knee, and if she didn't have contact with your dad, then she didn't have any place to see you either.
Right.
So at that point, it's going to become a question of, well, who wants to take in my wayward son? And what many black females wind up doing is turning you over to the system. Now, you mentioned that she called the police on you the first time. What did she call the police on you the first time for?
Because she said I wasn't following her rules and she wanted me put out. But they said she couldn't just put me out. They could take me to the juvenile and they get it all settled there. So I was there for like seven months the first time, then got out and went back again for a while. I don't know how long it was.
Okay,
again,
when it
remember.
Says he's not following my rules, what is that?
It was just about the church. About the
she did not
the church
tell them
the,
that. She did not tell them that. She
no,
did not
yes,
call
I swear,
sir,
I'm not going to lie to you, sir.
Son, I'm not
okay.
going to hear it.
You can,
I'm not, sir.
You can try to think
I'm
lying. I'm telling you the truth.
I'm not
right,
going
right.
to hear it. She did not call the police and tell them, my son does not go to church. I want him out. It does not with you being the age of 16, she did not.
That was 14, sir. That was 14
okay.
right there.
That's why. Okay, is 14 under 16?
Yeah.
Okay.
She didn't say I didn't want to go to church.
I can see why you got problems with mom now, because you don't stop talking. Even when you get wrong,
you picked up a lot of temperamental,
effeminate traits, and a woman does not want to live in the house with another woman. So that's the problem.
Okay.
Brother.
All right, 14, I'm going to let you talk, and then I'm...
14 is less than 16. I said if you were under the age of 16, and then you said, no, I was 14. Okay, I just said under the age of 16. Is there some part of under the age of 16 that you do not understand?
No, I didn't hear that part. It's like you keep cutting off a little bit.
So
but I'll just move to a better spot. I moved to a better
hearing.
Spot.
Now you've got collective hearing.
It's
very
a lot of trees by my house, sir.
I have a lot of females who call me who have selective hearing.
No, I got a lot of trees by my house, sir. And they don't got a lot of towers out here because I'm in a rural area.
You might want to tell the young lady, hey, can we get some trees cut then? Because it's affecting my reception. In any case, you were under the age of 14. She did not call the police and tell them, I want my son here because he won't go to church. They would have taken her.
Oh, no. She didn't do that. She didn't do that.
Okay, I said that several times.
She just told him that I wasn't... I'm sorry, I didn't hear that part. She said I wasn't following her rules, and she wanted me out. That's what she said, sir.
Okay.
I thought
and
I said
that
part, too.
What that means is you've probably been expressing some of the disciplinary problems that I've seen on the phone tonight, and that was probably what was getting you in trouble.
I mean, you could have your opinion because you're also
It's not an opinion.
So,
it's not an opinion. It's recording.
Okay, but
it's
you ain't even let me finish,
recording.
Sir. You ain't let me finish.
Yes, I did.
You ain't let me finish.
I've heard everything you have to say. You've already explained yourself. What I'm telling you is that just this brief encounter with you now, I can see several disciplinary problems right now. And you're 23. You're not 13. You're 23. And I still see issues here. And you're telling yourself, oh, it's a matter of opinion. You know that you're wrong. You start off the sentence with, it's a matter of opinion, when a person's repeated a fact to you. When somebody tells you a fact and you respond with, it's an opinion, now you already know you're wrong before you got started. Now, let me explain to you what was happening. What was happening is you were 14 years old, and you were becoming a disciplinary problem. And your mother decided to do her variant of tough love with you. Now, as far as everything else you mentioned about her wanting you to go to church, that's really ancillary.
Could I just say this one thing, sir, so you can get it? Because I think you're not getting the clear picture. This is the last thing I have to say. Then you can say what you have to say. She was supposed to say.
Very interesting.
Hello? I just got one thing to say.
I'm very glad to have your permission to speak on my own broadcast. I'm very glad to have that. That's very gracious of you.
I mean, you can talk right now. I think I left out a piece of information for you that might be very valuable. I think I left out a piece because I wasn't a bad kid. I don't talk back. I don't know if you're thinking I'm being rude right now.
I watched you talk back on this phone, son, so you've already proven yourself to be a bit of falsehood right here. But go right ahead and say what you're going to say.
Okay. The church, my mother was never a church person, but her husband left her for the wedding, and that's when she got into the church and said, God said I ain't going to never get a husband if – y'all kids is not right. That's what she said. She said she was putting the blame on us about the husband. My little brother, he's 18 right now. He's on the street now, too. But she got a husband now, a much older husband. But you can go ahead, sir. You can go ahead.
What you're trying to tell me is what you have had to say through this phone call is that you were a model child and a model citizen. Is what you've tried to say through this phone call.
Yes, I was 4.0 student, sir. Never did anything wrong. I just didn't understand the religion. It was like she was brainwashing me into something. I couldn't watch TV. I couldn't do certain things. It was just...
Tell me about... Okay, then. I don't want to hear about the religion because that's really ancillary. That doesn't mean anything.
Right.
Because every parent has some sort of ridiculous quirk that we all have to circumvent and deal with. And the truth is, when you're in their house, you have to circumscribe to some things. What you were saying before about she wasn't a very religious person, then I don't believe that there was a lot of religiosity that came in there in the last, after the age of 14. In that 4-year period, she just became a religious nutcase. No, that didn't happen.
Yes.
What
yes,
is
sir.
More
From
likely
2000...
is what happened. Sir, you can stop talking now. Because you already said before, I want to say the last thing here, and then you go on. Okay, you said it, but now you're still talking. Whatever happened to you, I'll say this last thing and I'm done. You did that, and then you did it again. What I'm telling you is that what you just did, that's what you were doing at your mother's house. Now, I'm not going to say that her rearing you didn't have anything to do with it, because what I'm hearing on this phone is definitely the product of her. But what I am saying is that it was not without reason. She didn't raise you to exemplify masculine traits. She raised you to have some trick traits. She didn't like somebody in the house who acted just like her. That's what she didn't like. Now, I'm going to jump on your mom. I'm not going to do that. What I am going to say, though, is that even for her shortcomings, the problem here is that she raised you to be deficient in masculinity. And she didn't like two women with bad temperamental attitudes being in the house at the same time, especially when the other woman is bigger and stronger than her. Even if the other woman has a mean hook shot and a good slam dunk, she didn't want to be in the house with another woman. That was the problem. Now, you can define for yourself, if you want to define it, redefine it, deny it, whatever, for yourself. What I want you to understand is that that second incident with the police, that wasn't a product of my mother's religiosity. Because as a black male, you know full well that all that showing out and being emotional and being irrational and erratic, you're supposed to know that that will get you in trouble instantly. One of you has a gun and a track record of shooting black males. The other is just a young fellow who runs off his house. And because when a female does stuff like, and Tariq Nasheed did a good broadcast about that, this is what I meant by you raised around trick housing project hood rat traits, because that's the behavior of hood rats. They jump up and get up and down. They get all emotional and yell and scream and make a bunch of videos because they're mad that people expose them. That's what hood rats do. They get up and yell and scream and curse and jump around and try to get attention because that gets them attention. Nobody puts a damn fist through their brain for them jumping up and down and acting a fool because they're females and people just dust off and, oh, well, you're just a female. It's different for you, son. You are a male. Nobody is going to mollycoddle a 6'2 male. Nobody is going to do that, whether you are 16 or 60. Nobody is going to do that. You show the first sign of being erratic and out of control, in cuff you go. Well, I was upset, so I smashed my phone because y'all don't be talking to me like this. Okay, off to jail you go. I bet you'll be controlled when you get
right,
the book.
Right.
I bet you'll
I see
be
what you're saying about that part.
I bet you'll be under control by the time you get booking. Oh, yeah, you
right.
were.
Right.
So you see, your mother is not going to argue with you. The police are not going to argue with you. And the school is not going to argue with you. Got with the white girl and realized
right.
your last best chance. And you got some at-right and something going up was what happened. So my answer to you is that, no. You had disciplinary issues, and I'm glad to see that if you finally reached a point where, in some way, because obviously you've got a lot of going to do, in some way you have grown up and matured. If I had your mother on the phone, I'm sure I'd have some details that I'm not getting right now, but I'm not going to blame you every day. Hey, son, the next time that I'm talking
to agree with you,
open up, is the next, okay, I'm going
to
say this one time, okay? The next time that I'm talking and you butt in to interrupt, you're going to be gone, not because I'm a jerk, but because people cannot hear the both of us at the same time. Now, you had your chance to speak. I let you speak. You're not going to sit here and decide that on my broadcast, you decide when I can be heard. Now, I'm very glad you've experienced some growing, and I'm very glad that if you started the process of maturing, obviously you got a heck of a long way to go. Or you can get the rest of that trick behavior out of you. You got a ways to go. But understand something. No matter what you do to yourself now, as you get older, you will realize that, no, your mother was not completely wrong. Not wrong at all. You may not like the circumstances under which it happened and whatnot, but she was not completely wrong. She was trying to deal with a situation that she felt she could deal with. But the problem that I have here is that how many of your other relatives are you? Is she only one of her kinfolk in your state?
I'm sorry, what did you say? How many relatives what, sir?
How many other relatives do you have in your state?
I got two other brothers.
No. I mean, I'm talking your mother.
How many kids does she have?
No. How many relatives does your mother have in the state?
Oh, she got a lot, but she don't get along with them.
Okay. You mentioned something before about trying to move in one of them.
I'm sorry. What'd you say, sir? My phone is acting very crazy. I'm sorry. What'd you say, sir?
Okay. Did you mention something before about wanting to move in one of them?
Oh, well, one of my relatives? Yeah, but he was another Jehovah's Witness. So they wouldn't just let me go my own way in life. But I agree with you. I took the trait.
Hey,
I get very defensive and try to
defend. Hey, you're done talking. Do you understand what you just told us? You just told us that my mother was never very religious, and then pop, one day became one. And I went to go stay with another relative, but it didn't work out there either because why? Same complete, another religious nutcase. If you wake up in the morning and you met one jerk, you met a jerk. If you woke up this morning and you met four jerks, the jerk is you. Now, everybody in life is not going to treat you the way you want them to. Everybody is not going to let you have your way. Staying with some people means that you have to take on some hokey mess. I guarantee with that white girl you've been with, it's been some hokey mess going on there too. But you got some act right when you got with her. You were with your people and decided to act like you've been doing on this phone. And what you found out is that grown-ups are not going to treat a grown man like a toddler. They're not going to treat you like that. So they're Jehovah's Witnesses. He wants me to go to the damn church with a mosque, whatever they call it, Kingdom Hall with him or whatever. If I'm going to be staying with him, then that's one of the rules of being with him. It's like if you stayed at a Catholic orphanage, guess what? You have to go to Mass. You go to a Catholic orphanage, you have to go to Mass too. And what you're saying is, well, I want a place that gives me room and board, but I want to make the rules when I get there. When you go to your job at White Castle or wherever you work, they give you a uniform. They give you a time to be there, and they give you a code of conduct that you must adhere to for the 8 or 9 hours that you are there. Wherever you go, somebody is going to have rules that cramp your style and constrict freedom. But the enemy of discipline is individualism. So I don't have a problem with what I've heard. What I think, though, needs to happen is you need to spend some time away from your mother. I think you need to go spend some time on your own so that you can go live in the real world and see the real life, what real life is about, and actually get a hold on what the real world is about for a grown man. Because so far you haven't.
Could I say something,
now,
sir?
As far as black empowerment is concerned, that's going to be a different matter. Because you're talking about, what you're saying is, well, my mom and black folks in my family was tripping, white folks took me in, so... What does that mean? What that means is that you didn't get along with your family, and you did get along with a white male. That's what it means.
I only had one other uncle. I understand what you're saying.
All it means is that you got with her, and you decided to change your attitude. That's all it means. It means nothing beyond that.
Well... I understand. I took something good out of what you just said. The only thing that I can agree with you on right now is that from how she used to talk to me, I got that defensive talk back like how females do. Like if I'm quick to talk to somebody fast with my mouth. And that's what I did. I agree with what you're saying on that. But I only had her and another uncle, and that wasn't working out. I understand what you're saying, but I work at Chrysler now. I got my own apartment. Just got me a car, been sitting in the house, just trying to save up money so I can open up this little business. I understand what you're saying, though. I understand what you're saying. But my little brother that's 10 years old, he had to call Child Protective Services, and my other brother that's 18, he went to school. My brother went to school and showed him a mark on him. So I don't know if my delivery came off wrong because I'm a little nervous talking, but it's a lot more than what is going. But I like what you said and everything you're saying because I do got that trait of being very defensive. Like,
well,
that,
you
that,
know what?
That's what
in all honesty, my brother went to school and has a mark on him. You know what? I live in Louisiana, and I wish one of my children would go to school and do something like that because that would be the last day they're in my house, too.
Right.
I want to make sure, I want to make sure you heard every word I just told you, okay? If one of my children ever went to the establishment and the government and said there's a mark on me, that would be the last day they were ever in any house of mine.
Right.
You and me on the same page. You threw that out there, so I'm going to give you my response to that.
I'm on the same page with you.
Okay, because if that was my kid, yeah, he'd be out too. I don't care if he's 18 or 8. If he's able to talk to other people about me, then out you go. You are big enough, old enough to challenge me. You are big and old enough to make it in this big bad world in this 13%, 8% employment economy on your own. No must, no fuss, no argument. So my response
to what you're saying
here is that does that mean that you cannot be about black empowerment? No, I mean, you can be for black empowerment. You can definitely contribute economically. You definitely can do that.
One more question to ask you, too.
You won't be able to speak on black issues, and you will not be able to speak on black destiny, and you won't be able to speak on the black agenda, but you will be able to help other black people with the black economy. That you can do. Now, that you will be able to do. I'll go ahead and finish, and then I need to take some more calls here.
All right. I just wanted to say, appreciate what you were saying. I'm about to add you as a friend on Facebook, and I just got to watch how I talk because I do got that little female talking problem. I got to get that together. And I like what you're doing. And, do you got a date on the documentary?
We're still working on that. We'll have a date here for everybody shortly, but not just for this situation, brother. Going to say the wrong thing in the wrong place, and it's going to cost you much more than a night in jail. It's cost you money and opportunities.
Yep.
That is worth much more than anything else, because you can get a lot of things back. You can't get time back. Time is the one commodity that you can never get back ever again, no matter how much you try.
All right. I'm about to get
calling in with us here, brother. Can you go ahead and send me that friend invite. We appreciate that. Caller from the 202, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Jason Black, Black Authority. This is Zion.
Brother Zion, start off the broadcast with the video you sent us. What's in your mind, brother?
I'm just calling in. I just got off of work, and I wanted to call in because that whole thing and the reason why I put up that video is because that whole idea of we are all human has been irking me for the longest. The whole idea that people can actually say that they can take away so much of what is wrong with our community and just chalk it up as a deflection of saying we are human has been really getting to me, as if to say that, oh, yes, we're all human, but you're forgetting that human beings actually created this type of system against us. That human beings have actually created this caste system to say that we are these type of people and that we are not allowed to have these type of opportunities. So it's like that's a constant reminder to people to say that, yes, we are human, but this is what human beings see as other human beings. You know.
What that video demonstrates to you is that the heart and the mind and the soul of white supremacy is far from dead. Far from it.
Definitely.
Not even close to being dead. Very, very, very much alive. And those were young white men. Those weren't a bunch of old senior citizens. Those weren't a bunch of old daughters of the Confederacy. They didn't have a bunch of Southern accents either. I mean, a couple of them did, but I mean, these weren't just Southern white women. And they sent the women. You all remember my video, White Woman Nigger Rampage. That I said in the 21st century that the spokesman for the 21st century will not be white men for white supremacy. It will be white women that they are going to now inject the poison with a candy coating. Sarah Palin, look at how cute she is. Even black men wish they could get a piece of her. She couldn't possibly be racist. Why? Because you want to sleep with her?
For sure.
Two white girls from Big Brother season 8. Couldn't possibly be a problem. Aren't they so cute? And the bottom line is that black males, as pathetic and disgusting as this sounds, the truth, black males will give up everything they have in the world if it means sexual power with a non-black female. They'll give up everything. Everything.
And you know what's funny about that? I'm in an apprenticeship where I'm learning water and wastewater technologies. Two black men I had just dropped out recently because their girlfriends, who I might have to add that are white, had said that they need to do something else constructive in order to help them, to help themselves, to help their family. So I'm looking at it, I'm like, are you serious? Are you letting another person really, you know, control your own fate and control what you want to do for yourself and possibly want to do for the black finance? You know, we can't have all these people trying to take away from us just because, you know, you got a piece of ass from them. You know,
well, it depends. It depends, though. What is your goal? Is your goal power, wealth, and influence, or is your goal bedding a woman? Because if your goal is bedding a woman, that's the crazy thing about it. You don't need power, wealth, and influence to bed a female. That's what I was telling the brother Lockett at the beginning of the broadcast. You don't need power, wealth, and influence to bed a female. You just need game. Long as you got that, that's it. That's all you need.
And that's funny about some people. Some people will sacrifice everything just for a little piece of sex, you know. Some people will give up lucrative things just for a piece of sex. And I've seen it. I'm in D.C. in Southwest Virginia, and I see people all the time that have something going for them, and then later they confess, "Oh, I just did that for the girls. I just wanted some A, you know. I just wanted some act for that." And I'm like, if that's where the state of mind of black men of today is, then it's definitely an uphill battle that we have going for us, and. You know, I'm not even sure if this isn't anything new in my opinion. I think it's been going on since back before, you know, I want to say even when we had integration, you know, as you were saying, integration was about us getting that pat on the head, us saying that we are accepted by the white people. All integration did for us was to say, okay, we can mingle with white people socially. You know, at the end of the day.
Well, no, the problem is that we have been mingling with white people since they first put us on the first slave ship. Mingling with them was not the issue. Integration was where we demand access to their schools and access to their old houses. And what never happened, they integrated everything in their society that they were willing to integrate to keep us from rioting and destroying the assets. They integrated everything except the power, wealth, and influence. That they never accepted.
Oh, yeah. I agree with that.
And that was the problem, is that in that video, you notice they never discussed the power, wealth, influence.
Right.
That's the point I wanted to make at the beginning of the podcast and make again now. If you are saying that we can discuss everything except the power, wealth, and influence, that's a difficulty.
I agree.
I'm going to move quicker here, though, brother. I'll let you have the last word.
Well, biggest thing that
I really want to just be a plea out to people that say that we are all human and stuff like that, is that you cannot forget that at the end of the day, that even though that they say that we are all human, they see color on us. And they know who exactly we are. But it's up to us to not only know who we are, but to integrate it in every sense of facet, and be socially, financially, spiritually, whichever you want to go for. You have to do it in a threefold with these people.
Well, what they're doing, though, when they say we're all human, what they're saying is, I adhere to the melting pot.
Oh, yeah.
I adhere to the melting pot. And as I explained to you all before, the melting pot does not mean that the dominant culture gives up their whiteness. The melting pot means that you give up your blackness. And when they say we're all human, what they're saying is we're all in the melting pot. In other words, I've sacrificed my blacks. And for black people, that means more than money, gold, rubies, self-respect, pride, dignity, and their children. Black people sacrifice their children in order to get acknowledgement and acceptance from the dominant society. And I dare anybody to show where it's not happening today. Maury Povich has made a living off of it.
Yep.
Thank you very much for chatting with us, brother. Please call us in again. That was Brother Zion. He was the one who's in the original video here. I'm going to have to quickly through these calls. I'm going to see if I can try to get to everybody that I can. We got an hour and a half left, so I'm going to try to get through as many of these calls as I can here. Caller from 949, you're on Live with the Black Channel. Caller from 949, last try, you're on Live with the Black Channel. Okay, caller from 949 apparently is working on their null ray. Zap people. Caller from 313, you're on Live the Black Channel.
Greetings. This is Dindu from Detroit.
What's on your mind, brother?
I was just calling to add a few things. One thing I can say is I really appreciate your broadcast and how you go about it. It's not the normal asinine, fatic conversation that goes on. So I definitely appreciate that about your broadcast. Another thing I wanted to ask you was, do I go on your site or something to be a part of your endeavors to support it financially?
Well, the website itself, I don't take any donation for that. I pay all this myself, so I always have. Other people got their hands out. I'm not one of those people. For a documentary that we're working on, I will be offering an opportunity for if they want to get involved with that. I will offer opportunity for that because I do see a way that we can make this a lot bigger if we do so. So that is something you will have an opportunity to get involved with there if you want to. And for everybody who's listening right now, just be aware I will be broadcasting tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Central. Same black time, same black channel. So if you're ready for a dose of adulthood and maturity with a great, big, huge helping of black empowerment, this is the place to be for that. So definitely, like I say, there'll be news coming about that here shortly as far as that's concerned. You have the opportunity to do that. If you are not following me on Twitter or Facebook, you need to be. You can keep up to date with everything that's going on because just got to be too much to try to update the website and everything else that I'm doing and edit the documentary and Facebook and Twitter and stuff. So something had to give there. So just kind of downsizing it, and people just follow more of your stuff on the social media sites anyway. So definitely if you're not following me in those places, you need to be. If you want to engage with me directly, Facebook is the place to do it more likely. And let's keep in touch about that because you're going to want to involve with this kind of thing because this documentary is the most important one of all time because it will determine whether you have a future or not.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's going to determine whether you actually have any type of future because if we don't get the hold of money, power, and wealth, power, wealth, and influence this century, right now, if we don't at long last correct ship and turn it around, there ain't going to be no future. For any of us, you might as well stop having kids. There will not be a future because ability to eat and pay your bills. It's amazing how people say that money isn't everything right until their stomachs start growling. Then money becomes everything. If we're going to correct this thing, this is going to be our last best chance to do it. And probably going to be the last chance we're going to have.
Definitely. And I am behind you, brother. So I'll just say Black First, and I will be in contact with you.
Thank you very much for joining us, brother. Black First, as always. Caller from 951, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Good evening, Jason. This is Mona Lachey.
Hello, Mona. How are you doing this evening? All right. I don't even have to ask you if you're Black First or human first. I don't even have to ask you that. So I'll just skip that question altogether. What do you think of what I heard tonight?
I'm over here deeply disturbed. We seem to be the leftover race, the hand-me-down race, the race that says, you know, we're cursed and this is our faith and we have to live with this. I heard the young lady earlier, I think she was from California, that stated that California doesn't know what's going on, and the South and the East Coast does. And I have to agree with her somewhat because I didn't get all this knowledge and information until I joined Facebook and got some West Coast friends, some down South friends. However, if the East Coast and the South know what's going on, where is their role model? Where is their Black thriving city with Black teachers and Black lawyers and Black doctors and their, where their children can see other people, you know, in masses that look like them thriving so that they are role models? Where is that on anywhere?
Okay. You can look at places like New Orleans where we dominate the political landscape, but we have no power, wealth, and influence. You can look at places like Atlanta where there is some money and is some influence, but they don't really have any power. And that mall in Atlanta speaks all Spanish, which I know is out there and stuff, and I want to give my own personal take on it, and we will later about that. In Georgia, are opportunities being missed? St. Louis, same thing. Washington, D.C., that is a city knowledgeable of its identity but refuses to exert its power. I've been to Washington, D.C. I told you all, you will see it in the documentary. And I can tell you that there were places in D.C. that are as expensive as any place in Midtown Manhattan. Let me say that one more time. There are hotels and parking places that are as expensive as anything that I encountered in Midtown Manhattan, right there in Washington, D.C., and yet Black people, Chocolate City, has no influence. So we've got numbers, but we have not been able to turn those numbers into power, wealth, and influence. Same thing when you move into up into Baltimore. You've got numbers, but no power and no wealth, thus no influence. So that is the problem, is that we as Black people have to put the cart before the horse. White people told us that if you want to stop bull, what happened was that we got addicted to legislation. After white people gave up the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act in 1965 and 69 and everything else, we told ourselves that the answer to all of our problems was politics, that if we could just get the right politician to listen to us, that we'd get what we wanted. Wasn't that with integration and desegregation and voting rights and Brown versus Board of Education? Isn't that what that was about? Getting the right politicians to listen to us, to pulling the right levers of government. That's what we took out of the 60s. That's what Black people learned from the 60s, that the way for us to move forward is to find the right lever, take control of the levers of government, and that once we have control of the government, hey, hands are clean. Everything will be smooth sailing from here. And what we've learned in New Orleans, in Houston, in St. Louis, in Atlanta, you see how we're from that corridor snaking all the way up around the East Coast, you know, doing that. In Charleston, in D.C., in Petersburg, in New York, in Harlem, in Baltimore, in Detroit, in Chicago. You notice how we snaked our way. You notice what we're avoiding, though. We're avoiding that Midwest territory. We're avoiding up into the Dakotas, and we're avoiding out west. You know, we did this big C snaking along from the top to the East Coast back around to the South. That's what she was referring to. We got our numbers together, and we dominate the political landscape, but what we didn't realize was that politics are worthless if you do not have the power, wealth, and influence. Politics are completely worthless. That's the problem. So down here, we understand it, and we've got the numbers where we actually have it. We haven't been able to translate political power into socioeconomic power. All we got was political power, and that's all we have to show today for it is political power. Nothing more.
So let me ask you this question. If they're going to move, I mean, run all the black people out of California and we go somewhere else, what's going to be the next state that they run black people out until we have nowhere to go to?
Oh, they're already doing that. That's already happening. I mean, understand something. You see the population dropping in Atlanta. Atlanta's about to go back to being a majority white city. In Detroit, gentrification is already doing those things. Take a look at Harlem. Take a Brooklyn. Now gentrification is finally moving its way into Queens. Take a look at D.C. What they learned was that it doesn't matter how many politicians you have, you can't vote if you don't live here. And those of us who control the power, wealth, and influence can decide whether or not you can even live here. That's what they've done with their power, wealth, and influence. They have dictated now who is allowed to live there. So it's already happening. Take a look at Compton. You know about that. It's already happening. They're already emptying out the ghettos. They're already emptying them out. And they don't have a problem with the Latins moving in because the Latins came with an agenda. They came with an economic agenda which can only help the dominant culture. Why? Because we don't deal in pesos in America. We deal in dollars. So every dollar that they make helps to strengthen the machine. It works for them, but it also helps to strengthen the overall machine. Now, that's why the Latins want to get their numbers up as high as they can, because they ultimately take over the machine. That's going to be a daunting task. We can debate about the feasibility of that, but the point is they don't have a problem replacing you with the Latins, because the Latins are willing to buy into white culture, and the children look like Caucasians. They have no problem. It'll be much easier to assimilate Spanish people than it will these Africans. So they're just going to empty you out of California. They're already starting work of emptying you out in Arizona, Colorado, Nevada. That's already begun. So they're going to flood down into Texas. You heard the young lady earlier say she's going from California to New York. Oh, what do you know? Right where I told you. Right where I told you.
Sure.
So that's what you're witnessing. It's not on the way, and it's not what about when it happens. We're witnessing it happen right now. 7% of population. Armageddon isn't on its way. Armageddon is already here. This is what being emptied out looks like. You will never wake up one day and there will be zero black people in California. That's never going to happen. What they're going to do is get you down to 5 or 4%. Wait a minute, we're already at 7. In other words, mission almost accomplished. That's what it means.
So again, we're not willing to fight. We're not willing to put our foot down. We're going to run to the next situation. We're waiting on a savior. We're waiting on a politician. We're waiting on a leader. We're waiting on a Jason Black to maybe have this big city and hire us. We won't do anything for ourselves. We talk and talk and talk and talk. And we sound real good and real intelligent. And a young man today, I just got off work. We were talking about children, and we were talking about ratchetness and how you raise your children. And he said that we are supposed to allow our children to stumble and fall to find their way. And I'm like, I'm amazed. And this is the same man that said money is for white people. And he really, if I had a way to exterminate him, I would, because he is a waste. And I hate to say it, because I love my people, but everything that comes out of his mouth, I'm astonished. And I'm like, wow, you have 3 boys, and they're supposed to find their way and stumble and fall? See, Jason, the problem here, we have babies raising babies for so long that I don't know if we can turn this around.
Yeah, we've had babies raising babies for so long that the entire culture is now full of a bunch of immature-minded individuals. We have a bunch of immature intellects, childlike intellects, only now they're in 20 and 30 and 40 and older-year-old bodies.
Right.
35 years old, but reasoning and talking like a 10-year-old. But then again, your mama had children at 15 and 16. She never became an adult, and now you've got a child with a childlike intellect raising another child with a childlike intellect who's going to grow up to an adult who's the second or third generation childlike intellect, already exists under a system of white supremacy that infantilizes people through its domination. So you've got a lot of hurdles clear. We are not going to be able to save everyone. That's just not going to happen.
You're correct, but here's the thing. I heard the young man, the 23-year-old boy, I don't know how you were raised, but we didn't get to talk back. And he had a whole lot of talk back. My son did not get to talk back. And they think they know everything. And they're missing the point. He had too much talk back to the point. He didn't hear anything you said. He didn't listen to comprehend and maybe change his ways. He listened to respond to you in a defensive mode. You can't learn anything in a defensive mode. You have to sit down and shut up and listen to grown folks talk.
You do not get to be a Jehovah's Witness by being broke. If a black person is a Jehovah's Witness, they middle class. Can we just be straight about that? I mean, from
exactly.
Michael Jackson to now. If they Jehovah's Witnesses because they making too much money to be Baptist. Can't stay with the Baptists.
Exactly.
Y'all ain't making enough cheese. I got to move on over here with the Jehovah's Witnesses. So when he told me that about his uncle, that told me everything I needed to know. That was why I'm not arguing with you more. I know where this temperament came from. You are not going to tell me that you were sitting in that house with Sidibe and Monique. Y'all Jehovah's Witnesses? No. That kind of situation going on. Wasn't that kind of situation going on? Well, I didn't like the stern religion. Well, you know what? I understand that. But if you can get your head well enough when you got that white girl, you can be more respectful with your mother until you get out of her house. And the situation with the police the second time, well, I'm slamming cell phones down. Okay, that tells me we have a deeper issue going on. That tells me we have a much deeper issue. And like I say, what he's learned now is that it's a shame that he had to deal with a white girl before he grew up. But the issue is about that. He understood that that was his last chance, that he doesn't have anywhere else to go if he screws things up here. So he had to grow up real talk, real fast, real quick. That was what happened there. So I'm glad that he's gotten a ways along. And I'm not going to beat up on the young man. What I am saying is that that's not going to pull the wool over our eyes. And unfortunately, there's a lot of black males out like that, interacting with the world infantile and immature manner, and they are not getting the results that the females are getting. There's a social service program for the female. That's because by controlling the females, you control the next generation. Neutralize the warrior class males, and you control the next generation through the female. Why would you not do that? They spend, what, $75 billion last budget. Now they want to build $100 billion for food stamps. How much are they spending per year in Iraq? Damn near a trillion. So what does that tell you? That food stamps budget is part of the domestic military budget to keep black people oppressed.
Right.
That's how it works. They're willing to spend that money because it keeps you oppressed. And too many people are siding along with the system.
I don't have anything else to say. I want to continue to listen.
Well, stick around with us here. I definitely want you to listen in tonight, Mona. Thank you very much for joining us. Let's take caller from... Somebody's been on here so long, it's not even telling how long they've been on here anymore. I do not like that. Caller from 786, you're live with the Black Channel.
Black first, Jason.
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
Lonnie from Miami.
What's on your mind, bro?
Yeah, first, I'm black, not human. Human is used to make white people feel comfortable. It's a white flag that you wave to say, I'm here in peace. Don't worry about me.
It's like Jedi mind trick. What they do is they look at you and say, you're not black, and you stare back at them. I'm not black. You're human. I'm human. Yeah, but the problem is that human is defined by the dominant culture. The default, all these generic terms are defined through the context of the dominant culture. So when you say I'm American, or I'm an American citizen, or I'm a human, that is going to be defined and determined by the dominant culture, not by you. You don't get to define what human means. The dominant culture defines that. The majority defines that. But that scares me when I say that. They hate it when I say that because now they're like, oh, you found out. Yeah, we found you out. You're scared.
Yeah, they're terrified. The last success that we had was the Civil Rights Movement. They won something, and that's it. Now it's time to blend in and be accepted. Maybe we could get some respect, love, and admiration if we just blend in with them. Now we have what we wanted instead of, okay, we have the right to move forward, but we're going to stay together. Everybody just spread it out and moved out. When you have doctors and factory workers living in the same neighborhood, then you have all those dollars in the same place. As soon as it ended, here go the doctors off to the white neighborhoods. Here go the lawyers off to the white neighborhoods, waving their white flags to everybody. And now we have a situation we have to rebuild, and we have a bunch of people saying, "No, I'm not black. I'm human. I'm not just black. I'm African American. I'm American. Why can't I just be American?" Because they want to blend in, and then maybe if we get closer to white people, if you look throughout history, every oppressed people got away from their oppressors when they did. Black people, we stay here. The entire West Coast should be New Africa, not California. It shouldn't even be part of the United States. The first thing they should have did was, oh, slavery is over. Let's get as far away from these white people. No, what they did was they moved not too far away from white people. We have this thing about just being next to white people. Because notice that the first places that when we move out of black neighborhoods, when we finally build something for ourselves individually, the first place that we want to go is a better neighborhood. We don't go to the next better black neighborhood. We go to the white neighborhood. You have to get to the white neighborhood. We don't go to the Jewish neighborhood, the Asian neighborhood, the Hispanic, the Latino neighborhood. We go to the white neighborhood. We have this thing about being next to white people that we can't get away from. Cedric the Entertainer said it in Kings of Comedy. White people going to Mars. Oh, you think that you just gonna leave us here? No, we're gonna be behind you in a Cadillac spaceship. Because we have this thing about we have to be next to white people. Whatever we do is just to be next to white people. They're the only people that we really even want to be next to is white people. Even if you told those men in California that you can be along with the Asians, but you can't be along with the white people, they'll give that up. They'll say, you have to pick white people or the Asians. They'll drop their Asian girlfriends and wives in a minute and say, no, I want to go and be with the white people. Because it's something wrong with us. It's something that we just have. And we continue it with religion. And we continue it with wanting to work for white people. Because that's the way that we get to white people is to work for them. If we work for white people, then we could be around more white people. We have white friends. We can meet other white people instead of building our own. Because if you build your own and then you have black employees, then the people that you're going to be around, the people that you're going to be friends with, and the people that you more than likely are going to date are going to be black people. So they can't build a business. They can't work for a black-owned business. They have to work for a white-owned business. Now, if you're a black-owned business and most of your employees are going to be white, especially for white men, black men, white females, then you're going to get black men that's going to show up to work, and they're going to work hard in front of white females. But they won't work hard in front of black females. They don't want to work with black women, black men. They want to work with more white people because it gives them a bigger opportunity to work with people that they really want to be around. It gives them more of an opportunity to be around or be around them and show them that, hey, I'm religious. I believe in your God. Like women, we have religious women because they want to be more accepted into into white society. They want to be more integrated into white society where they can go and say, I believe in your God the way that he is. Even though the book that you gave me depicts him differently, I'm going to believe that he looks more like you, so I can be part of you. I can be friends with you. If I get blonde weave in my hair, if I get blue eye contacts, I'm closer to you. You're human. So I'm human because I look more like you. Don't wear a beard. Don't wear black T-shirts. Don't wear anything. Look more like them. Get a suit, but get a suit that a white person would wear, not black, a suit that a black person would wear. We had completely different contrasting styles from white people, and we traded them in because black men would trade anything in for two things, sex and more sex, and that's it.
Isn't it amazing how quickly black men could go from looking one way in college to look like RG3? I mean, boy, he put on that damn prep sweater and whatnot, standing next to old girl, boy, didn't he switch up real quick, man. Didn't he switch up real fast, talking about clothing style. That didn't take 5 seconds to happen. Kind of tells you what's been beneath the surface, but that overriding disdain, and I might talk about that later tonight. I might do an extra broadcast tonight, I don't know. But that overriding disdain is definitely sitting there. I'm going to have to move along, brother, but I'll definitely let you have the last word.
No problem. Black first, not human.
Black first, brother. Thank you very much for joining us. Let's see if we can get a few more callers in here. Okay. I'm just going to have to take these as quickly as I can here for everybody who's waiting for a while. Like I say, I opened up the beginning broadcast. Nobody wants to call in. I guess the game must have been on or something, so I'm sure glad the game went off to give us a chance to be here. Caller from 216, you're on live with the Black Channel.
My name's Herb from Cleveland, Ohio.
What's on your mind, brother?
Basically, I'm one of these I'm a baby boomer, and I've been listening to your show for quite a while, for the last 3 years. I'm a teacher, and I'm also a business owner. And I teach math in Cleveland Public Schools. And I was listening to you was talking about blacks are afraid of empowerment. And I can say, yes, I agree with you 100% because I'm looking at them being educated. And these kids are not being trained to compete. And I talk to my students on a daily basis about telling them, hey, America is about competition. It's not about the kumbaya system. And they've been misled. And I just see the failure from the families and the system that the system is doing what it wants to do. And that is to make them docile. They got them dealing with a failing situation. And I get kids who go from, we have a K-8 system. Once they get to me, they don't know how to add. They don't know how to do fractions. They can't even tell time on the clock unless it's digital. I mean, it's pathetic what we have to go through. And I got to make them a genius in 2 years or 3 years to pass the state test that's getting harder every year. I think, like, when they tell me things about diversity or just like you were talking about this human thing, it's a cop-out. It's a cop-out seeing that you surrender. You don't want to empower your communities. You don't want to empower yourself. And you think that money, success, is for other people. And I agree with Dr. Claude Anderson 100% and the others who have been leading the pathway that we just have to deal with people who want to have something. You have to just ignore, leave people alone who don't want anything. And that's the biggest thing. Quit preaching and throwing your pearls to swine who don't want anything. And the only way we're going to do that is get with people that want something. And speaking for myself,
that in blacks, like in America, Latinos set up a dual economy separate from the white economy. Asians have set up a dual economy separate from the white economy. Arabs have set up a dual economy separate from the white economy. Intelligent black people will have to set up a dual economy separate from the white economy and the creation of the white economy, the nigger economy.
Right.
We have to set up a black system, a black infrastructure, a black society separate from white society, white supremacist society and its creation.
Right.
Because they created the nigger class. They created them. And that's why the government programs exist, to empower the ignorant class. That's why it's there, is because the ignorant class makes sure that black tycoons will not rise. That's its purpose. And that as long as we, as intelligent black society, stay stuck on this religious concept that it's our job and our divine duty to save everybody, then they know that that'll be albatross that'll hang around our necks till we die. And what they're counting on is that we'll keep chasing that carrot until we fall over. And you and I have to say, you know what? This is strategy, and in every war there's casualties. And
right.
We're not going to sit here and let you pull that trick on us. So we're going to cut our losses, which is what you did not expect us to do. We're setting up our own infrastructure where we deal with our people in our society. We're not going to deal with everybody. We deal with our people, people who are on the same page with us. And so we have to set up that infrastructure, and that's where you improve your schools and your neighborhoods and everything else. But you're absolutely right. You're not going to get there by trying to save everyone. As I've told people before, there's a reason why you don't have toilets in your kitchen. You're not supposed to mix everything together.
Right.
There's an appropriate place for actions and activities. There's a reason why we don't do that. I'll let you have the last, brother.
Well, like I said, I should say black first. Appreciate the broadcast, and I'll be listening in again and listen to your comments. And like, I'll be listening to your broadcast tomorrow, what you said, 7 o'clock. And I just want to just say one other thing. Remember, the Arabs, Jews, Asians, Hispanics do not let you in their mix. They don't be asking what the niggers think. They know what you think. And one thing what Dr. Claude Anderson said, which threw me off, that really gave me some insight when he was about ready to have businesses in Detroit, and the blacks, because their white counterparts said that they didn't agree with them, they did not let the business go through, that was treason. We do not look out for each other, but now it is the time. So I just say, like, and I agree with you 100%. We just have to work with the people who want to do something. The rest don't. The casualties, they're just, you know, they're just out there. We just move forward. So don't worry about, you build it, they'll come. That's what's been
now,
said. That's all
here.
I have to say.
Questions, yes. Here, though, about what you just said. When Dr. Claude Anderson wanted to set up that distribution network and that system in Detroit, who
right.
was the mayor of Detroit during that time?
I don't remember. It was the one that got arrested, I think.
Kwame Kilpatrick was mayor.
Kwame, yes.
Where is Kwame Kilpatrick today?
He's in jail.
All I'll say to that is, God don't like ugly. Thank you very much for calling in with me today, brother, since he wants to empower the system so much. He can spend the rest of his life now in purgatory with the system that he felt like empowered so badly because he didn't think it was worth it, and Monica Conyers didn't think it was worth it. White Daddy will protect me. White Daddy's got a plan for you. Dr. Anderson is still out here making things happen, but I don't expect them to understand that. Caller from the 310, you're on Live the Black Channel. Last try, caller from 310, you're on Live with the Black Channel. Okay, caller from 310 has been abducted. Caller from 585, now they're usually supposed to be listening at this number. 585, last try, you're on Live. Okay. 585 is usually sitting there playing with themselves, so I'll just leave them where they are. A little odd here. Caller from 612, you're on Live with the Black Channel.
Hi, I'm just listening.
Okay, caller from 612 is just listening. Try pressing the number 1. On your keypad again, and everybody else who is in queue right now, If you're hearing me, try pressing 1 again on your keypad, technically speaking. That should take you out of host queue. Be right back with everybody here in just a moment. Caller from 700. Sounds like you are driving up the railroad.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Where are you calling from?
I got this cheap program. I don't know what it's called. It lets me make free calls on my computer. This thing sounds terrible. Do I sound good?
You sound all right, but it definitely sounds like you're calling from a computer. I thought you were driving over the Poconos at first.
That's funny. But no, I was just listening. I'll get in contact with you later. Oh yeah, I just want to say one thing really quickly. Just 5 seconds. That's it. I guess you probably know. I don't know, but I did look it up myself. But I just want people to keep in mind that in the U.S. Constitution, they say that black people are only 3/5 human. So we're not all human. I just want everybody to keep that in mind.
Very good point. Thank you very much for sitting in with us, brother. I'll just put you back on hold here if you wanted to just listen. Yeah, it sounded like he was driving over concrete blocks out there. Like he had a Ford 350 and was just boom, boom. Goodness. When he say, I'm TBA, you said we're supposed to be working. Yes, I did say that, didn't I? Caller from 702, you're on live at Black Channel.
Hello, Jason.
Yes, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Food. This is Devontae calling from Las Vegas, Nevada.
What's on your mind, brother?
Hello? Not too much. I was just listening in. First, yeah, I'm black. I'm not human. You know, not in the context they use it. And like I said, it's a rude awakening. I was talking to you the other day about my upbringing in a suburban neighborhood in the cul-de-sac, and then you realize, no, we're not all human, especially growing up with friends that, you know, are from the dominant society. And you start to realize that the older you get, the sooner you realize it, that, you know, you start to realize it real soon. You can be human, because I used to get that a lot as a teenager or when I was in school, especially when they decided to integrate our school technically by busing people from the other side of the city to where I went to high school. And you'll get the, you know, other black kids and white kids, oh, you're not black. No, I'm black. The way I talk, the way I dress, the way I act, that don't make me not black. I'm black, no matter how I look, how I speak. Yeah, I'm black. So when I'm walking down the street and you don't hear me speak, I'm black. So just because I can speak, well, don't mean I'm not black. And, you know, it's come actually more from the dominant society, and they were just saying it as like a, you know, as a compliment. That's not a compliment. That's never going to be a compliment. I'm always going to be black. I can't change that, and I wouldn't if I could. You know, and I get it at work and everything. Well, you're not like, well, I'm not stupid. That's what you're trying to say? Are you trying to say I'm not stupid? That's a difference. I mean, I'm always going to be black. Just because I'm not stupid don't mean I'm not black. And that's what you're talking about when you said, you know, the nigger society. You're not part of the nigger society. You're not black. You're human. I'm like, no, wait, hold on. No, that's not the society that we want to be a part of. We want to be a part of the black society. I always want
to
be a part
Thank
of the black
Thank you very
society,
much for making that point. That's a very good point, is that, okay, well, if we're not niggers, we have to be part of the human contingent, which, and we know human is code word for what? That's a code word. That problem with human is it doesn't actually mean human. It's a code word that means stamp, white approved. That's what it means. And our goal is not to become the fake white people. Our goal is to become the real black people. That's the goal. That's what we're supposed to be moving towards.
And I believe we could get there, but you know what? A lot of black people have to lose this, you know, this thing about trying to please everyone. When I say trying to please everyone, I mean, I see it all the time where I'm at. They're trying to be friends with this person or be friends with that person. And I notice something, and it's not like, you know, we really can't be friends like that because we really don't have common interests. But when you're not that friendly, what am I like? Aren't we friends? Aren't we? No, coworkers. Or no, you know, you're the mailman. Or no, you're the trash man. Why do you want to be my friend so bad? You know, I'm not really that interested in being your friend like that. just, you know, for shits and giggles. Like, if you're going to really be my friend, you got to really have my interest in mind. To you know, and I know for a fact that when I'm dealing with some black people, not all, because I can't be friends with some of them either because they don't have their own best interest in mind. They just want a pat on the head, and they love it. They're like little dogs. I mean, they'll roll over and let you rub their belly, and I've seen it. I mean, I've seen some of the biggest, strongest, you know, most, you know, prominent black men, and I'm just looking at them like, you're actually a supervisor over this person.
They become children. They become infantilized, as Dr. Francis Craig Olson said. They become like infants. They become like children to them. If I can get that pat on the head, man, everything is cool.
And it's strange. It's very strange because I noticed that. And the one thing that I was noticing is that it was occurring with people that was their subordinates. These were people that were managers. And the people they're doing this with are people, sometimes new hires. And I'm like, you just hired this person. I mean, you've been here for 15 years. This doesn't make any sense for you to be behaving that way with that person.
They've been there 15 years. They have no intentions on rising any higher than where they are. The average black man wants security. And this is what I was referring to the other day when I told you all that they want. Black people are afraid of poverty. If you're afraid of poverty, what do you do? You seek out security. You seek out some place that makes you secure. So what happens is that black people wind up occupying the bottom rung on the ladder of socioeconomic empowerment. We end up occupying that bottom level. And the reason that we end up on that bottom level is because we never aspire to more. We want something safe that won't be taken from us. And the only thing that won't be taken from you, some rinky-dink middle management position, that's the best you're going to have. And the best you're going to be able to get in under the system if you want security as provided for you by the dominant culture. That's all you're going to be able to look for, and that's the only thing you're going to be able to get. We're coming up a little bit short on time here, so I'll let you have the last word now here, and we are coming up. I'll try to get a few more calls in.
Well, Jason Black first, dominant always as well, and you guys have a great broadcast. And I'll be calling soon, hopefully tomorrow.
Thank you very much for joining in with us, sir. And as I said before, I will be broadcasting tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Central Time, same black time, same black channel. You are all very well welcome to join the home of Intelligent Black Thought. For those of you who are new here, I hope this has been a new and refreshing experience for you. Black people who try to entertain you. I don't come on broadcast starting off with "It's Boy TBA." I'm not your boy. I'm the man. This is not a place that seeks to make you happy and make you smile. This is a place that we want to deal with concretes and to deal with enlightenment, that we talk on issues. You're listening to us, and it's like, wow, I thought I was listening to ABC. They run down the numbers and the facts and the figures. Yes, fully informed black people, pinnacle of black society, all the things that you told yourself there couldn't be, that's what we do here. And we're the only place that does it. So for those of you who are new to the Black Channel, I want to welcome you here. And I want you to become a part of what we're doing. Because everywhere you've been told that you have to look down. That looking down is where you will find the best in black society. And I'm telling you that if you've thought better than that, if you wanted more than that, if you're tired of being a black man who has to smile or a black female who has to frown, this is the place for you. If you're tired of black people talking about irrelevant things, this is the place for you. This is where grown black people come to talk. And if that's what you've been waiting for and looking for, look no further. You found kindred souls. Let's see if we can grab another caller here. Caller from 949. We're on live with the Black Channel.
Oh, I hope that's not me again.
Okay, that is you again, but boy, you got ray beams going on there.
Hey.
You pressed one. Okay, that's fine. I'll just put you back on hold. No big deal. Just let me know. If you let me know you're there, then I don't have to sit here and make a monologue out of you, because I'm prone to do that kind of thing. Caller from the 480, you're on live the Black Channel.
Hey, I'm just listening.
Okay, this happens at the end of every broadcast. I get all the listeners calling in then. Let me go ahead and put him back over here. Okay, that person down there, I'm not going to talk to you. Nothing personal. I'm just not speaking to you. Now, caller from 619, you got abducted earlier. Are you there now?
I'm here, but I'm just listening. I pushed the wrong button. Sorry.
She pushed the wrong button twice. That is danger prone.
No, I pushed the end button on my phone instead of the mute button.
Wow, she was looking for the mute button and pressed the end.
Yeah, they're on top
Don't
of each other.
Don't you hate it when that happens? Just out of curiosity, are you black or are you human?
I am very black.
Okay, just have to check out that. I've still been looking for a human to call tonight, so I've been waiting anxiously for a human to check in, and so far it hasn't happened. So thank you very much for giving us a call. I'm not doing very well locating humans out here. I feel like the aliens in those movies you all watch. We're looking for the humans. Can't seem to locate them. Caller from 954, you're live with the Black Channel.
Hey, Jason, what's going on? This is Dion calling out of Fort Lauderdale.
Black First Bros on your mind?
Yeah, I wanted to just let this be known. I think one of the issues with blacks is that nowadays is that we have not come to the conclusion that we have to separate ourselves from the society. You know? Look at this. If you look at most of the situations that we're in, this is about the fact of the matter we have not learned how to handle or work with ourselves. And I've noticed that anywhere you go, even when you go to black businesses, it's the same thing. Even when you work in a business environment, it's the same issue. Is that you could be in a meeting with black people, and I've noticed this, is that you could have a group where you could be Spanish, Indian, and Chinese. We can all be in a meeting. And you know how you usually have those times where, you know, everybody kind of socialize. I've noticed that most of the time blacks do not gravitate towards blacks. In those type of environments, we'll mingle with everyone else except for ourselves. And I think one of the biggest problems I think with integration was, is that we took it for the wrong scope of understanding. And I think one of the biggest things that has allowed us to perpetuate is also the situation when it comes down to women. You know, I mean the how we are now, where most of our families are usually a woman who's the head of the household. And I think that conditioning has been brought, perpetuated by, onto the children. And we begin to think and behave in those same manners. Would you agree?
Well, I mean, and we've touched this before, is that for black men, when we show up at a business meeting, the only people who ain't there for business are black men. Black men will look for the nearest females. And if there's no white females, they'll look for Asian. If there's no Asian, Latinas. And if there's nothing else left, they look for black males. Black men do not go to a business meeting on business. They go females. And this is the problem, is as I was saying before to the first caller who called in, that Mr. Lockett, that the problem is that we as black men define sex as power. And even when it's time to get real power, we're unable to break that programming, that conditioning, that the only power we can really get a hold of is sexual power. So if we spend our whole lives trying to salve our egos, like the 23-year-old fellow called in here before, okay, he's got a job in an apartment, but he won't know how blackness is going to affect his relationship with this white man. That's what he called me for. He wants to find out, well, can I have her and black empowerment too? He didn't say, can I have black empowerment? He wanted to know, can I have black empowerment and this? So even in his asking that question, he wanted to know where the hoes at. Now, black men show up for business thing. Black men will mingle with women. They'll mingle with women. They will not willingly mingle with other black men. But you know why? Because a black man doesn't know anything substantive to talk to another black man about.
That's true.
Together, this Asian's got his business on the ball, this other Asian's got his business on the ball, and they both get together to fight, okay, what can we do for each other? How can we collaborate? The average black male is at the company trying to keep on hold of his job. He's not trying to move up. He's not trying to move over. He just wants to get some stability where he is, as I explained to the previous caller, to Devontae. They just want stability where they are. That's what they came for. Our goals are so small and so meager and so pathetic as black men. We don't want power. We want empowerment. We're happy that they let us stay in the building. And that's why when you take them to a business meeting, they might as well be the janitor because they didn't come to do business. You've given them an opportunity to upgrade their skills, and all they really want to do was hang out with females. In other words, the same thing that they were doing back at the office. All you did was pay for them to go out of town to a hotel to do exactly what they were doing back. They're not trying to make any connections. I've said this before, and I'll say this again, because I made my video, The Hollywood Whorehouse, and for those of you who are not subscribed to my YouTube channel, The Black Authority, you definitely want to go ahead and check that out. That video is blowing up. You want to take a look at that and see?
Yeah, that's the
video called
good.
Hollywood Whorehouse. And in that video, my point of making the video is that black folks are complaining. We're complaining about what the water's done. We're complaining about True Blood. We're complaining about all these TV shows and whatnot. Okay, but I tell you every day, here's the equipment you can use. You make your own, even if it's just online. That's where all the damn programming is going anyway. Even if it's just there, here's alternative. Black people want to complain. They talk, well, this is not good enough because it's not on TV. Okay, but then they come back complaining about Facebook. They come back complaining about World Star Hip Hop. They come back complaining about what they see on YouTube. If white people do it, it's worth talking about. If black people do it, we immediately diminish the value of it. It's not that important. If black people are doing the exact same thing that white folk are doing, if a white YouTuber has 2 million videos making an online show and a black YouTuber gets 2 million videos on an online show, the black folk will still get together and do what? Complain about what the white guy is doing. Instead of saying, hey, ours got 2 million. This is something that represents us properly. What can we do to help bolster this? That was the point of Hollywood Whorehouse. The point of Hollywood Whorehouse was that if white folk made something where if we had a situation where the cameras that they used to shoot those big-budget Hollywood movies only cost $300, in other words, to call a new cell phone, if they had that, black folk would still be complaining. Black people would still not lift a finger to make their own thing. They talk about getting grants from the government. If they give grants from the government to make their own TV shows, don't you know black would not do it? We would wait for white people to show up and do it. We would never actually do our own. And if we did, it wouldn't make it a quality thing.
You think that would be the case?
I don't think it would. I'm saying the past is the best indicator of the future.
From my own evaluations, I've noticed that most of the time when it comes down to us as black men, many of us just don't know, or let alone not even know where to look for information, or even, I would say, even have the drive to even try to achieve a dream or an ambition. And as opposed to like what you were talking about with the Hollywood Whorehouse, I mean, dude, that was awesome. One thing that I've noticed, and I've like when I was speaking, I was telling some friends of mine, we were talking about Scandal and a few other shows. The number one thing I noticed, most of them always say it's just entertainment. It's just acting. And you're like, no, man, it's acting for them, but it's influence for you. And it's like sometimes it just goes over some people's heads, you know. And I've even said that to some family members when they were watching Scandal. I was like, you ever really watch this show and just kind of like analyze the show, right? And they're like, no, it's just entertainment. She's just addicted to power. And I'm like, no, dude, she's playing a whore, and the only person who she really even bows down to is a white guy. Have you not noticed that? Oh, it's just entertainment. I'm like, this is why I don't watch television, you know. But like I said, dude, I like what you're doing. Keep doing what you're doing. Do you see my number by any chance?
Do I see a number? Yes, I do.
Well, this is my number. If you don't mind, if you can, write it down. Maybe one time we can have a meeting. I got an idea for you.
Okay, well, It'll be better if you send me a message on Facebook because I check that a lot more frequently, and it'll give me a way of cataloging exactly who are the people who've been in contact with me and who I want to prioritize. So it'll be totally
well, okay. Mr. Black, you blocked me.
What was your name?
Dion.
Okay, and was that your only name?
No, that was the name on there. You blocked me. I don't want to talk about it. It was something I think you should have just asked me what was the nature, reason why I said what I said.
No, I don't have to ask you that, brother. I'm a as Jay Randall said, I'm a jerk and I do the dance. No, if I don't block people for no reason. If I block you, it's because I asked you about something to clarify and you did clarify it. And that was what got blocked. But I'll tell you what I'll do. What I want you to do here is, because I've got two names. I'm pretty sure you're not blocked under both of them. Because I haven't blocked by name Dion in a while. It's been like a couple months.
Okay, well, it's probably
that's what I'm thinking.
Like
it's been a couple of
years,
it's been a couple of months. So, were you friendly under Jason Black or under Black Authority?
Jason Black.
Okay. Send me a friend invite on Black Authority then, okay? Same picture of Elder Cleaver. You'll know him when you see him. He's got like 1,800.
It's called Black Authority?
Yeah, just it's the Black Authority. You'll see the picture of Eldridge Cleaver. And it's got like 1,800 people. And so just send me a friend invite under that one, and I'll know who you are. The reason for that is because let me know which one I need to unblock under Jason Black, because I've got a number of people named Dion. I just want to make sure about which one is the right one. But to be honest with you, like I say, I mean, that would be the best way, because that's really the only thing that I check regularly. After that, if I need to contact a person further, I do, but I've just found it to be so incredibly useful. You all ought to check out some of the things you can do with Facebook like pages. Usually when my things get high enough, which we're almost there as a matter of fact, I'm going to consolidate them all into one like page. So before it's over, I'm actually going to consolidate everything under one profile. So the Black Channel, Black Authority, all the Black Authority names, blackchannel.net under Facebook and everything will all be under one profile name. When it's all over, I'm trying to wait until the documentary is up and good and going before I do that.
Okay.
Just so you all have a heads up, that's the reason why I'm doing it the way I'm doing it, because ultimately you're all going to be under the same name. So I don't want people being blocked unnecessarily. So you want to definitely get off that list as quick as you can, because when it's a like page, there won't be anything else besides that. It'll just be one page, and people can come to it and see it if they want to or not.
Cool.
But that'll also be the end of the VIP seating also. So everybody who I do talk to personally now, once it becomes a like page, but not, it's very unlikely that I'll be responding to anybody personally, because once you get up to 8,000 and 10,000 people, I mean, I showed you all before how many messages I get, so it's just become unwieldy. So everybody who hops on board now, hey, you know, you'll be known, and other than that, in the future, I won't be unless I spend money with you or you spend with me.
Cool.
Well, thank you very much for checking in with us. Go ahead and send that invite to me. I'll be sure to check that out for you. Thank you very much for calling in. See if I can grab another couple of callers here, and then I'm probably going to sit down. This is the cost of being popular. Caller from the 310, you're on live over the Black Channel. Is 310 playing on my phone? Okay, 310 is playing on the phone. We'll let them go. Is 682 playing on the phone or on your live Black Channel?
Can I be heard?
Yes, we can hear you.
I'm just listening in. Thank you.
Okay, 682 did not put themselves on hold from before. I'm going to need you to stop playing on the phone, please. Okay, well, since we're getting a bunch of toying around on the phone, I think I'll just go ahead and drop it down now. Brothers and sisters, the 21st century is going to be time that's going to test Black people like no other point in history, because the 21st century is going to determine if the nightmare that you never thought can happen is about to occur. It's going to determine whether or not Black people wind up returning to the field. That's what I'm trying to tell you. That is the ramifications of everybody else swatting up. Don't you all understand? That's what this is all about. That's what this has always been about. All of this has been about determining who's going to be out in the field. Everything. All of this is about finding out who's going to be out in the fields and who's going to be in the house, living in the shade, enjoying their life. That's what all of this, racism, slavery, plantations, segregation, Jim Crow, and now the new Jim Crow, white supremacy. Brothers and sisters, that's what it was always about. And that's what it's still about today. It's about finding out who's going to be in the fields. It's about finding out who's going to be in the fields. And by the way, don't fool yourselves into believing that robots are going to be able to solve all that, because it's much cheaper to give birth to children than it is to build robots. As the robots become more sophisticated, it will become even more expensive. Having people has always been the cheapest way to get labor. People have always been and will always be the cheapest and most cost-effective way of having labor. Always. Always. So, even if they do have robots will only perform specific tasks. Believe it or not, in the most incredible and ironic twist of fate, the dirtiest work will not be formed by robots. Robots will take on higher-end functions. It will still be people who do the dirtiest work, because people are the cheapest. That's the way it's always been. This fight has always been about determining who is going to be doing the dirty work and who is going to sit back and enjoy and reap all the benefits. That's what it's always been about. Always. Remember, the money will control everything. The money will control that. And in case you all didn't notice, if you don't believe me when I say that, ask yourself a question. Are the new gaming consoles that are out cheaper than the old ones or more expensive? Ask yourselves that. Are the new gaming consoles cheaper or more expensive than the old ones? Are your new televisions cheaper or more expensive than your old ones? Your new camera equipment cheaper or more expensive than the old ones? Your new computers, are they cheaper or more expensive than the old ones? We go down the list from your cell phones to everything else. And as a matter of fact, as you all know, they don't actually sell the Xbox for a profit. How many people here know that they do not sell Xboxes for a profit? How many people knew that? How many of you know that? How many people know that the Xboxes are not actually sold to make a profit? How many people know that? Xboxes have always been out there for the same reason. Because that's the hardware that you need in order to buy the games. Now, I'm not a gamer. I'm not a gamer, but my gamers know that. My gamers know that the Xbox itself was not intended and isn't for making money. My gamers know that. The long-time gamers. Some of you newer people don't. But the gamers know that. To Today they are spending upwards of $30 to $50 billion for every major Xbox game. Call of Duty, the War games, Halo, the top-tier games, Devil May Cry, if anybody remembers that, Final Fantasy and all that stuff, Grand Theft Auto. Those games cost upwards of $40 million to make. Activision spends upwards of $40 million. That is why those games cost you $50 and $60 and $75. But the game is worthless if you don't have a console on which to play it. And if they were selling the Xboxes for profit, those systems would be closer to $800. The costs have to remain relatively close to manufacture simply because they have to make sure that the games get in your hands. And Microsoft makes money that way. That's where the real money comes from. The Xbox is a way of dominating the video game landscape. It's done pretty good so far. Sony is making a comeback, but you get the idea. That's the real point of doing this. So what I'm telling you is that history and time have taught us that these things get more expensive, not less. They get more cost prohibitive, not more. And as time goes on, it's only going to get more expensive. So robots are not going to be your way out of this. People. It's always going to come back to people and whether or not we are able to keep them subjugated. That's what it was always about. That's what it's always been about. Rob Wicked, Google gives away Android. That's right. Sophisticated operating system for cell phones, and yet Google gives it away. It's always been about people. It's always been about determining which people will live in the house and which people will be forced to live in the fields. That's what the 21st century has come down to, is. It's on its way there. It is there. And you will have to decide, will you be one of the people who lives in the house? Will you be one of the people who lives in the field? Are you going to sit here and keep begging to be determined as a human to make them feel safer with you? Or are you going to demand the respect and consideration and say, no, you will respect me as a black man on black terms. And I will respect you as a white man, as a Hispanic, as an Asian, as an Arab, as an Oriental on white, Hispanic, Asian, Arab, Oriental terms. I will respect you as you are. That's the question now. It's time to choose. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the BlackChannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. I'm going to be broadcasting again here within the next 15 minutes if anybody wants to stick around. There's something extra that I want to do here tonight. So if you want to stick around, within about the next 15 minutes, I should be back. And I'll just have something real short. I don't know if I'll get calls or not. We'll see. But I'll be here in the next 15 minutes. And a little something extra I just wanted to deal with as well. It'll be up to you if you want to deal with that or not. But until then, brothers and sisters around the world, remember, black is the future. And the future, as always, is uncompromising. And until next time, eat, drink, sleep, think, breathe, feel, live, and be everything we are first.